It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Iannocco is here. Jason Snell is here. Alex is taking the day off, but we've got a new contributor. I'm very excited to welcome Stephen Robles to our microphone. He is from Apple Insider. You've probably seen him on their or heard them on their podcast or seen him on their videos. We have lots to talk about. Of course, the number one topic of conversation. We're only a week away from the next Apple event. What will Apple announce? Some new rumors breaking. We'll talk about those. Also, what does the invite mean? You know, why that Starfield? Or is it an Alka-Seltzer? I'm not sure. And then the 162-page Apple repair manual. Jason Snell says he can do it. Can you? It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 833, recorded Tuesday, August 30th, 2022. Beard Tectonics. Listeners of this program get an ad-free version if they're members of Club Twit. $7 a month gives you ad-free versions of all of our shows, plus membership in the Club Twit Discord, a great clubhouse for Twit listeners. And finally, the Twit Plus feed, with shows like Stacey's Book Club, The Untitled, Linux Show, The Giz Fizz, and more. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit, and thanks for your support. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. The week before the Apple event, you could guess what the Apple news will be today. Jason Snell is here from sixcolors.com.
You've been spending too much time around Micah Sargent to do some singing at the beginning of the show.
I blame him. You're absolutely right.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, my God. He thinks he's Beyonce. And it's rubbing off.
Yep. It really does. It's contagious. It is. So it's good. Great to be here, Leo.
You also do a show with Micah. You do Clockwise.
Yeah, and for a little while. I'm summer fill-in replacement.
You have something else in common with Micah, but we'll talk about that in a second. Andy Iannocco is also here. WGBH in Boston. Hello, Andrew.
Hey there. Hi there. Hi there.
Are you trying to connect the sideburns now? Are they going to actually, or is that their idea?
No. Oh, no. I just didn't shave. I do the pre-flight like half hour before the show to say, is there a disaster looming that I need to take care of or not? And unfortunately, I got an affirmative, so I didn't shave this morning because like, okay, it looks like we're unplugging lots of stuff.
John Ashley, our technical director, is zooming in.
Yeah, thank you.
I caught that, John.
I am fully aware. Okay, thank you very much. At least get my profile.
I thought that maybe they'd come to life and they were deciding that they should join up in the middle.
No, they're a team player. My brain is not always on my side, but my sideburns, they're always pulling with the team. I'm very, very proud of them.
And Alex Lindsay sent me an email last night. Actually, he didn't send it to me, but he sent somebody at the station an email and said, I can't be there. But good news, because at the same time as he sent out that email, I got an email from Stephen Robles, who is the guy behind audio and video at AppleInsider.com. And I thought, and let's not forget Beard.fm. And
they connect all the way. You know, I got the.
Here's a great opportunity to have Stephen on. So it's nice to meet you. Welcome to the show.
You as well. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. And they said, well, should we sound check him? And I said, Stephen is a professional podcaster. He will be completely prepared.
Ready at all times to podcast. That's how it goes.
So, Micah,
Stephen, if I can just offer one bit of advice, you're going to regret having the sides of the beards connect, because that way you get a land bridge for the mics on the left side of your head to your right. That's exactly how North America got colonized.
It's plate tectonics beard wise. No, yes. It's a good beard. It's a good beard, and Jason and I are now feeling very left out. His website, he is the Bearded Teacher, does a number of podcasts. Including the Apple Insider podcast. Also, by the way, a podcast about the HomeKit. So we may prevail upon you for your HomeKit expertise, HomeKit Insider, and a podcast about movies. So I'm going to get you on with Devendra Hardawar of Slash Film, and we'll talk about movies on the side.
Love to do it. We could do a musical show as well as you start.
Can you
show.
Sing? Oh, yeah, you're a trumpet player.
One day more. I'll do a little lame
Lord.
For you.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, a big musical theater in high school.
Another right. day, another destiny.
It's just in. Micah Sargent is driving to the studio right now.
Road road
to
join in.
So Mike
and Andy,
seems
we'll
to
do
know
it.
My crown. Sorry, go ahead.
Me and Andy, we could do the whole show right now.
Micah was setting up to do Clockwise last week. Was that Wednesday?
Yeah, Wednesday morning.
And you were doing it with him. And did he squeal? Did he sing? What happened?
It was surprise and shock, I would say, what it was. So basically, the Apple event notification went out, and everybody was like, oh, the Apple event is going to happen. It's September 7th. It's the Wednesday after the Monday, which we, you know, it's obviously this is a thing that they've done before. They did it in 2016. So, okay, that's great. And Micah then said, oh, mine says, please come to Cupertino. And I was like, yes, you did it. You made it.
Not just Cupertino, by the way. To the Steve Jobs Theater.
Steve Jobs Theater, yes.
Yeah, and you got that invite as well?
I did, yeah. So I'll be showing Micah the ropes next week, I guess.
Has he not been?
No, this is the first. He's a first timer.
Oh wow, that's
I suspect.
Wonderful.
I mean, he's great, and also I think that Apple, because this is the first kind of all press event, I think maybe Apple tilted it to the Bay Area a little bit more since Micah
is
local.
That makes sense.
It's a little easier. You know, some people I know who are further out, I think Apple was understanding that maybe not everybody wants to come for a single day event from, you know, far away.
If they were far out.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't want to, I mean, I don't mean to say anything less about Mike. I just think that was all of us in the Bay Area here got a little advantage because they know that it's easy for us to drive down for the day. And I think that was a big part of it too.
Andy, were you too far out there in your New England estate to get an invite?
As a general rule, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I think the days when I'm too old and too freelancy to say, yeah, let's spend $1,300 to attend a live stream event for one afternoon and lose like 3 days of office work, like in the travel and all this sort of stuff. So
to watch a video, presumably, and then go. And the hands-on area is very valuable and it's useful. But yeah, absolutely. Once you start thinking like, all I'm doing is sitting watching the same video everybody on the internet is watching at the same time, maybe a minute or two before they see it. And then you get the hands-on time. And that's valuable, but it's like, it's not the same as a whole big, you know, lots of people milling around and you're seeing it in person for real. It's just a different thing.
Steven, you going?
Not going, I'll be covering it remotely. You know, we typically do like a little recap episode, but these recorded events, they go by so quickly, you know, so much information in such a short time. I'm usually just scrambling the entire time taking notes. You know, they're very fast paced.
Yeah, I think Jason Snell used to have to. I know Micah used to have to type.
Well, you used to have like three people typing at the same time, didn't you, Jason?
So horrible.
Yeah, before Google Docs, we used SubEthEdit, which was a Mac app that let you do
shared
everybody
editing.
Could be in the same document, and we would do that, and we would be live. Before there was live blogging, we would do these. Okay, let's back up. Apple was like, no live blogging at Apple events. For a while, people kind of honored that, and so what I ended up doing instead of live blogging is what I called live reporting, which is basically I would write what was happening into that SubEthEd document and then later a Google Doc, and then somebody back at home base would turn that into a news story that updated minute by minute. So it technically wasn't a live blog, but at some point the dam burst and they didn't care anymore. And then I went back to live blogging and live tweeting, and it helps when you type fast for that sort of thing.
This was from the days when Apple didn't stream it. For a long time, Apple didn't stream it. And so had to be there.
Once everybody could see it, it's a lot less necessary to do. Now, these days I'll sort of tweet out the big headlines and some thoughts about it. But like everybody other than I do hear from people who watch it or who want to watch it, but are at work and the videos are blocked. And so for them, a blow by blow of what's going on is valuable, but for most people they can just watch it
or if they really care find out an hour afterwards by looking at all the
well always yeah of course if you don't want to watch the baseball game you can just look at the box score.
I'm thinking Micah is in South Petaluma, so maybe he was just inside the cutoff line because I'm in North Petaluma.
I think they think you're your brand it has not invited as such a key part of it that they don't want to blow that up by inviting you to an Apple event.
It's part of the trademark. Well, and actually I was very relieved that Micah was invited because it meant he was not tarnished by his association with me. So that's you know.
Wait a minute, what did I sign up for here?
Steven, it's okay. It's okay.
Too late. You've already been identified.
We still don't know, although Renee Ritchie told me, he said, I can't tell you in public, but I'll tell you off the air why you're not invited. So, and he's yet to do that, but supposedly he got the inside story. I don't care. It's actually just like you, Stephen. I've got, somebody's got to, you know, hold down the fort.
That's
it was going to be me and Micah. I guess maybe it'll just be me all by myself.
But I can, I might be able to join your life.
Would you please?
Let's plan on my joining your life this time.
It's good because, stop it. Don't show. Go ahead.
I'll shave before it. Fine. I'll shave. Oh, there you go.
This is the last time I was at an event. that was the iPad announcement in 2010. Look to my right there. That was the editor-in-chief of PC Magazine.
Michael Miller?
Michael Miller, yeah. In fact, you probably could see a lot of famous people in that seat. The guy in front of me with the glasses and mustache looks familiar. And anyway, none of them were pointing a laptop at Steve Jobs introducing the iPad and streaming.
But I think you're in there with a chance. If they manage to like lift the iron curtain between themselves and Gizmodo, if they let Gizmodo back
Gizmodo is like the first to tweet the invite. I thought, really, Apple? You're going to forgive them for buying the iPhone 4 from some guy who
found
it in a bar?
Find a stolen iPhone, yeah.
You're going to do that, but you're not going to forgive whatever. Anyway, I always, this is a joke because I don't really care, but I always end up talking about this. We will be doing the coverage live 10 a.m. Pacific. That's 1 p.m. Eastern time on the 7th, which is a week from tomorrow. And I'm, you know, we were talking before the show about this, Jason. If I always a little conflicted about this. We do the Samsung event. We do Microsoft events because they're really just program length ads for a product. But
yeah, now more than ever.
Yeah, really. Especially the way Apple's producing these. They're so beautifully produced. They really are just like TV ads that go on.
Yeah, it's an infomercial, essentially, right? Starring Tim Cook and company.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is.
Yeah, which
yeah
is
but
cool.
I mean, the way you guys do it, where you're, I mean, you're laying, you know, your take on top of their commercial message. And I think that does provide you're not just rebroadcasting it, right? You're doing something transformative and providing commentary about what's going on. And
yeah.
I think that there's value in that.
Yeah, although we don't stream it on YouTube because last time we did, which was a few years ago, some Apple lawyer sent us a note saying, actually took it down, I think. But we don't look for it on YouTube, but it might be on other places. I was actually, Andy, thinking of inviting Paul Theroux, the host of Windows Weekly, because he tweets his snark. I think I might. Would you mind if he joins us?
Your show. I think that there needs to be a Mo, a Larry, and a Curly. So you cast all of those roles the way that you need them.
Okay.
I don't know why you don't get invited, Leo. I don't understand it at all. It's crazy.
Paul would be great because he is kind of the remember Dvorak in the back of was it Macworld?
Mac User.
Mac User. Was it your magazine?
Andy and I were both there. Yeah.
Yeah. He did the anti editor in the back. Mm-hmm. He would always say, "Nobody wants a mouse." And
beige is a dumb color.
Beige. Yeah. He called the colorful Apple MacBook laptop. He said it looks like a toilet seat cover. Toilet seat. So the T for a long time called it the toilet seat Mac. So. Yeah, I'll be that guy. No, I guess Paul will be that guy. I'll be Mo. I think with your sideburns, you've got to be Larry. I'm sorry.
Thank
Andy.
You.
Yeah. And we'll let.
No. If I'm going to pick any of the three, Larry, I think, especially in the early shorts, he was like the anarchist. He was the one that was about to like overthrow the government if he weren't checked by a much stupider leadership. So that's very much my brand.
I won't tell Paul that means he's Curly. He could be Shemp. He might not mind being Shemp.
Curly Joe.
This is not Curly Joe. Yeah.
Not Curly Joe. Yeah. That was like the wrong Darren on Bewitched. All right. So tea leave reading time. Here is the picture. And there are two ways to interpret this invite. The one that says far out says something. And then when you pair far out with a picture, show the picture if you would, John Ashley. This looks like something the James Webb Telescope might have sent back. In fact, they even look like galaxies. Some of them are on the side and stuff. It's either that or they're going to introduce the new Apple Alka-Seltzer tablet, apple-shaped. I don't know.
Or maybe they're bragging about how bacteria-free the Steve Jobs Theater is.
Yeah, look at it.
That's the Petri dish from last year. Now it's
Look, it's clean. Nothing. Yeah. Well, there's a few stars inside. Just a few.
Maybe my guess is that if it means anything, that maybe they're going to up the astrophotography features of the new iPhone camera, because I was surprised at how much I love the astrophotography on my Pixel cameras, because it's something, okay, fine, great. It's a great demo. You're going to get some headlines or some bullet items in your coverage that day. But then there comes that time where you just happen to be outside and taking like a picture of like the beach and like, oh my God, it's full of stars. And it becomes one of those five features that you use maybe once a month, but the one time you use it per month, you don't even bother waiting. You just send it right to Instagram or right to your group chat.
Google, of course, is the Pixel 6, and you have one, has excellent astrophotography capabilities. They touted it heavily last year, but Apple will probably say, hey, we're the first. Steven, what do you think this invite means?
Yeah, I think a prevailing theory about a camera update, 48 megapixel has been a rumored,
right,
might be the next camera on the iPhone, which first time since the iPhone 6S that has been updated. It's been 12 megapixels since the 6S. So a 48 megapixel camera plus some astrophotography and lesser, there's been that satellite and iPhone connectivity rumor. It was rumored last year. And now with T-Mobile and SpaceX kind of working together, those rumors heated up again. But I think it's more in relation to the camera for sure.
The Ming-Chi Kuo says it is the satellite. He says that actually has been in the iPhone since iPhone 12, that capability, but they haven't been able to get a partner. His rumor was that Globalstar will be the partner and that they will announce it on the 7th. I do think that the fact that T-Mobile and Starlink announced this last week sounds to me like they're trying to get ahead of the Apple story, because T-Mobile said it won't be till the end of next year that you'll have this. Jason, what does satellite connectivity mean for users?
Yeah. I mean, it's this whole idea that there are certain scenarios where you are somewhere where you can't get a signal. And you see the story sometimes. Somebody gets, they turn on the wrong road and they're lost in the wilderness and the snow is coming down. Or they're out on a hike and somebody falls, or they get lost out in the wilderness and you don't have a cell signal and you can't call for help and can't tell people where you are. Now, there's a chain of things here, right? First is any device, I believe, in the U.S., and it might be worldwide, that has a cellular radio on it, if you don't have service, but it sees another cellular site, you can call for help. Like, that's a thing.
Says that. In fact, if you take the SIM out, you can still make 911 calls, right?
Yeah. So there's that. But what if you're so far out that you can't get that? And the idea here is that there are companies that are or are about to offer satellite broadband coverage where on a certain frequency you can get probably, it depends, like Starlink, they're talking about fairly high bandwidth. For this stuff, the assumption is it's going to be really low bandwidth. Like, maybe you wouldn't even necessarily be able to make a voice call, but you could send a text message that could get you to an emergency responder and say, either I'm in distress and here's where I am, or the other feature they're talking about here is I've seen something, like I just saw a boat sink or something and I'm out in the middle of the ocean. I can send my GPS coordinates and say I'm reporting this thing that just happened. So the idea there is that you're never truly entirely out of contact in case of an emergency. I mean, in the long run, there's probably another conversation to be had about, and this is sort of what T-Mobile is doing with SpaceX, which is the idea that when you're out of coverage, you're not out of coverage, because just as it steps down from like 5G to LTE, you might get a situation where it steps down to satellite connectivity, which might not be as good, but is covering the globe. And so you're never out of signal. That's the whole idea. But I think they're starting with emergency services, which is what the Apple story is probably about.
In fact, T-Mobile says at some point they want you to be able to make phone calls. Voice and data.
Yeah, that's the goal. And SpaceX's second generation satellite should be able to provide that kind of bandwidth, because they're trying to do this for home internet in places that are far off. So you can get broadband-ish speeds from SpaceX's Constellation. But this Globalstar Apple rumor is, I think, at least initially more about emergency, messages to say, help, I'm in distress. Because you go back to those stories where somebody's out in the middle of nowhere and they've got their cell phone, but no service, and they don't, even if they know where they are on a map, they can't tell anybody.
Yeah.
There could also be a story, the Apple Watch Series 8 rumored for this event, and a more rugged or pro model coming out. Apple could tell a story of like an adventurer kind of thing where you have satellite connectivity, mm-hmm. where you can at least do SOS text messages from your phone and pair that with your Series 8 watch for adventurers, hikers out in the woods, kind of do a whole ad featuring those two features. I could see that.
That exists now, the Spot Watch. A lot of people who hike in wilderness areas wear emergency watches that do give them that kind of limited connectivity for emergencies.
That's the sort of thing that it gets me a little bit worried about these features. That there are, like, if you do a lot of hiking or if you're in a job that takes you into the wilderness that way, you probably have a very inexpensive device that gives you these kind of features. It's not a satellite phone, but it's a way to transmit your GPS coordinates and your situation to people in an emergency. And by definition, people in those positions who went out and bought these specialized pieces of gear, they know that it's not because, hey, I can't find my car, or, hey, I need to know this, that, and the other. We already have people who call 911 because call the fire department because they're out of gas and they're hoping the fire truck will bring them some gas. I wonder what would happen if people get the wrong messaging about this. No, this isn't for, hey, you're in a bit of hardship. This is the situation where you are going to die without help and you need that help desperately. And I wonder what would happen if this becomes a consumer feature built into every phone and prone to that 1% of 1% of people who are just absolutely flaming idiots.
I get that, but at the same time, this is a feature that's built into every phone in terms of the emergency SOS, and I don't recall hearing stories about it being misused that way, but I will defer. You know, the fact is, never underestimate the ability of people to be jackasses. I mean, it's they will.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to tell you the weirdest rumor I read based on this invite far out. I don't think this makes any sense. A periscope camera for the iPhone. We've seen these on other phones where it kind of rises up.
No. That by periscope camera, they don't mean rise up.
They mean internal periscope.
That the lens is actually mounted horizontally and it's actually firing through a prism.
Actually, there have been rumors they were going to do that, right?
I think the Ming-Chi Kuo report says the 15 is going to do it. So next year, next year is probably the year. Like, this will be, as Stephen said, the biggest phone or camera update that they've probably done in years, in almost a decade.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing that drives sales, by the way. I mean, I didn't move on the 13. I have the 12, and I thought it's incremental.
But different audiences, though, right? Yeah. Like, because, you know, next year is probably when we're going to get a visual redesign. And that drive, for a lot of people, it's all about the looks.
How it looks.
But the periscope camera is also rumored for next year. And that's really interesting because, right, the optics, the physics change completely when you have longer distance for the light to travel.
Andy, do you have a periscope phone?
Yeah. This is the Pixel 6 Pro. And that gives you like genuine 4x optical zoom. And when you combine that with algorithmic zoom, which is Apple's algorithmic digital zoom, is just like Google's, in that those of us who have been growing up with phones saying never use digital zoom, it's just garbage. The ability to interpolate between pixels is amazing. And when you combine that with the 4x zooms, it's just it is a game changer. It's just what phone makers, including Apple, are really chasing after these days is ways to finally give users another one of those upgrades that says, wow, this is a breakthrough for me, or this is totally different than my camera before and my phone before. It's nice to have a faster CPU. It's nice to have a faster refresh rate and better color on your screen. But the first time that you're taking pictures of your kids playing soccer and suddenly you can zoom in and get great pictures of them, like standing in goal, that's when people say, oh my God, I didn't know that the new iPhone did that. I got to upgrade my phone right now.
I also have a periscope in my, this is the Galaxy S22 Ultra. And actually this one goes to 100, which is pretty wild. I took a few pictures with the optical, digital zoom, which I don't trust. Let me see if I have some pictures from Alaska where I wanted to try all three and zoom in. I wish I could.
I'll see if I can quickly find an Instagram post I made earlier in the summer where the combination of the pixels, at least optical plus digital zoom, there was just this dot on the horizon and it generated what I consider to be a very credible picture of two sailboats in the background.
Yeah.
This changed the relationship with the camera.
This is the whatever it is, the 1X, the basic. Actually, this is probably their wide, which they call 0.6. Zooming in to the one, I think this is the 1X. This is the Marjorie Glacier in Alaska. And I think this is the 10X. So that's the same position, the same zoom. And it really is a high quality. I'll have Google fix the lighting because it looks a little bit dark. But it is a very high quality image. It's an optical zoom. So that's pretty impressive, I have to say, the ability to do that.
Yeah. I just put the picture in the notes.
Far away. Oh, good. All right. Let me pull up your picture here.
That's the one thing about the 3X camera on the iPhone. Every time I switch to it, I immediately regret it almost. You know, you really have to have really bright lighting outdoors.
Yeah.
You know, if you're at the beach, maybe. But any other lighting condition, any kind of low light, the 3X just really isn't very usable.
Here's your zoom. This is a 20X digital zoom. And you could see in the water some digital kind of smearing and
so exactly
forth.
It's not perfect. This is 4x optical extended to 20x.
Yeah,
but that's for most people who are not like I'm not trying to shoot the cover of Vogue. They're just what they want to get a snapshot of something that's happening too far away,
right,
to get a good picture of. And yeah, that's like Stephen said, that is one of the very, very few areas in which an iPhone camera doesn't look like it's holding up. I'm really keen to see if the rumors of a 48 megapixel sensor are true, whether they're going to give you access to larger than 12 megapixel images, or whether it's going to be 48 megapixels, but it's binning down to 12. But that means that each pixel of resulting image is going to be basically four times as much light, four times as much data, four times as much resolution.
That is the thing that I'm most curious about, because you know Apple likes to tell a story about everything, but especially about cameras. And the rumor is it's 48 megapixel sensor, but they're probably going to bin it down to 12, right? So and they're going to talk about their algorithm, and they're going to do all of that, and they're going to say we don't need to do sweater mode anymore, where we take five pictures and put them together. We can just take 48 and make some good decisions in our ISP that's on our amazing new chip, and blammo, a beautiful photo. But I also wonder, Andy, there are other things you can do with a 48 megapixel sensor. You can do some smart things, so your quote unquote digital zoom is more than a digital zoom, because you're able to potentially use more pixels on the sensor by zooming in and using that, right? Like, so do they enable that? Yeah. Do they do some image stabilization that's clever? There are like so many other things they could do, because it has been, as Stephen said, a 12 megapixel sensor for so long. And I'm really curious about what they're going to push in terms of going to the bigger sensor, because there's a lot of stuff they could sell on that and build in with software, but there's no guarantee about any of it. Like that's where they can get creative, and that's what we don't know, right? Because we know the rumor about the sensor is probably true, but what is the software that enables it? And that's still a mystery.
Yeah, and Apple does so many clever things that way. They could do things like, yes, you're shooting like a 4K or an HD video, but unbeknownst to you, the camera is also looking to see where your kid is going off frame, and making sure that wherever they are off frame, the autofocus will be ready to adjust, because they're moving kind of towards the camera, and the focus could get lost. Or something as simple as we've seen in FaceTime, the ability to simply track a head's movement and do a fake pan zoom. But imagine being that good, even when, again, you're taking pictures of your little kid who's running around, and if you just basically already tapped on the kid's head and say, please track this individual, the ability to, yes, you're doing a bad job of following the kid around, but the actual software is actually capturing where that kid is, not necessarily where they are inside the frame that you can see. It's with Apple, it's always really, really exciting to see how they do this stuff. They're the anti-Samsung. Samsung would say, we have the first 100 megapixel camera. Apple will say, we have a camera that will actually let you keep up with your 3-year-old child.
Right. And they'll also say that the A16 chip, which presumably will be in that camera, will have an image signal processor that's specifically designed to do all the things they want it to do. And the neural engine is going to be specifically tasked to the machine learning of the image analysis. And, right. Like, they'll tell that whole story, but they are good at that. That is one of the things that's Apple's strategy with the iPhone camera has always been really interesting, right? Because they don't necessarily chase the numbers, but they're very proud of what they can do in terms of their processing. And so that when they make a leap like this with a raw megapixel number, it's really interesting to wonder, like, how do they spin that? What did they decide to do with all those megapixels? And that's what I'm looking forward to, maybe the most, I think, on the 7th.
This is, of course,
there's a rumor that the A16 is only going to be on the iPhone 14 Pro model.
Right.
And so if this 48 megapixel camera is the standout feature for the Pro and only that gets the A16, I'm curious what the story will be then for the regular 14. There's going to be a larger size, supposedly, so you can get a bigger screen, but not sure what other hardware updates that could come to it.
That's an interesting question. I think it's widely accepted that there'll be two different chips. There'll be the A15 and the two bottom line of the line phones, and then the two top lines, the Pros, will have the A16. I don't know if that's going to make a huge difference.
The always-on display coming to the Pro supposedly probably has to do with that chip and power saving and all.
Yeah, good point. And a bigger size, right? 6.7 inches for the two Pro for the. Well, wait a minute. No, I take it back. There'll be two 6.7-inch phones, one Pro Max and then one not Pro Max, right?
Correct.
This
maybe
is all
Plus
rumor.
Coming back? Yeah.
Yeah. And no, and I'm sorry, Jason Snell, but you knew this. No Mini.
No, it breaks my heart.
It's
the
heart.
Amazing thing is we've had these rumors. I mean, we've had these rumors for like 15 months now that this is what was going to happen. It's been this has been in process for a very long time.
Possible
and now we finally reached the end.
Is it that we're wrong and that we're going to have a big surprise on Wednesday?
The track record of the supply chain analysts like Bing Chi Kuo is very, very good. And Mark Gurman, who has a very good track record at Bloomberg, he also says that this is what's going to happen. So, like, I feel like there are not going to be surprises. You got to take the surprises where you can get them, right? And that's why I'm so excited about, like, how they're going to sell the camera story, right? Because, like, we know the specs of what it will probably be, the camera, but we don't know the details. We don't know how Apple has spun it and put it all together in the way that they do. And that's because that's marketing, and it's also, like, high-level software and chip strategy that doesn't leak because the people are like, look, they made a chip. And it's like, okay, that doesn't tell us anything. I do wonder, by the way, about the chip marketing. It is a real great question that Stephen asked there, which is how do you market a new iPhone, the base model, that has the same chip as last year's model, if they do that? Like, what do you do to differentiate it? That's a hard thing. Sometimes I wonder if what they ought to do is sort of like brand, like if they made any changes at all to the chip from last year to this year, brand it as the new one and then call the high-end one like the A16X or something like that to differentiate.
Yeah, but you guys are all going to call them on that the minute they do that. That's
if it's exactly the same, but if it's like a new process or something, but you're right, exactly. If we're like, oh, but it's really just the same. So, okay, fair enough. Then how do you sell a new phone with the old chip in it? That'll be something to see.
They'll probably do a huge segment on iOS 16 again, you know, talking about the iPhone 14. I mean, they usually do that anyway because iOS 16 is coming out. But that larger size is going to attract, I think, a large audience, people that want a bigger screen.
Sure.
Don't care about promotion and any other things. And as far as accuracy of the Mini versus the regular, the last couple of years, one of the most accurate leaks has been the models that come out. And you'll see these leakers actually get like the actual models or whatever they are, like clay versions. And we did get the 13 Mini last year as one of those models. But this year, there was definitely no Mini size. And there was the two smaller iPhone, or, you know, iPhone 14 and then 14 Plus. If they call
it. Here's the tell, because when you go to the Apple store right now, right there in the specs is A15 Bionic, and so they make that processor a big part of what they're selling. If that disappears in the iPhone 14 descriptions, if they don't mention the processors, that's the tell,
well,
right?
There's stuff they can bring back, right? So there is enough differentiation between the iPhone and the iPhone Pro at this point that there are things that they could bring back to the iPhone standard, even while leaving the chip the same. But that's going to be the question, is do they pull back another camera? That's a big question. Or do they pull back the LiDAR sensor? Does anybody care about that? Or ProMotion? They could put the ProMotion display on the lower end model if they wanted to. But like, lacking that, it's going to be weird, right? Because what's new if nothing's new? So there's going to be something that has to be new there other than just iOS 16, right? There has to be something else.
Well, you know who cares about the LiDAR sensor is Apple. End users may not, but if Apple's going to continue to promote its AR capabilities, they need.
Sure, but it doesn't. It's not going to say, oh man, I got to get that iPhone
with the LiDAR. no one's going to do that.
Well, one of the leaks this morning was possibly a new MagSafe accessory coming out at this event. And that could be something where we haven't heard a lot about MagSafe in the last 2 years. You know, it came out with the iPhone 12. And so if they have a new accessory or possibly a new feature like reverse charging for AirPods coming to the iPhone 14 lineup, that could be something they throw to the lower end iPhones as well as the Pros. So I would like to see more MagSafe stuff anyway.
I don't know how credible this leaker in China is. U1122, Apple Insider, has the story. He says, according to the leaker, change in MagSafe, quote, MagSafe magnetic force is stronger. MagSafe exclusive battery accessory has been added. I've seen other rumors that say it's huge. It's really big. This is actually an interesting, you know, this is the silly season where you're going to have people make stuff up. He says, and I don't know how accurate he has been, the storage space is the same as that of the iPhone 13 series. I had heard some rumors say that they're going to justify the higher price, because that's the other rumors, that the prices are going to go higher, by more storage. This guy says expect some surprises in the pricing. Prices may be in a completely different direction than expected.
Wow.
He claims this information is coming. He claims this information is coming from pre-production testers. So they have, but then Apple Insider quite rightly says, well, why would they have pricing?
Yeah.
They wouldn't have pricing. So maybe that casts some doubt on all of this.
It will be interesting if there's a larger regular iPhone 14, how that stacks in the pricing model. Is there going to be an iPhone 14 Plus that's more expensive than the 14 Pro? Or will they kind of move some of those prices down to make more sense?
I mean, there's room above it, right? Because the iPhone 13 line starts at $699, but that's the mini. And so it really starts at $799. And so there's room there at $899 for an iPhone 13 Max or Pro or Plus or whatever you want to call it. I will say this about that pricing rumor. There was a report from, I think, Ming-Chi Kuo, who said that they wanted the average selling price of the iPhone to go up 10% this year. And there's no way to do that with mix. There's no way to do that in saying, well, we're not, the mini's out and now we're selling more of the iPhone Max and Pro Max and that we're going to make it up. You got to raise prices somewhere to do that. But I think the thing that gives me pause about that story you just mentioned, Leo, is that it mentions surprises with price. Losing $699 as the entry point for the iPhone will be a little bit painful for Apple. So I wonder if the iPhone
have the SE still, right?
Sure. But when you have your new phone, I mean, you go to that iPhone page and it's like iPhone, you know, iPhone 13 starting at $699. And then if they have to say $799, it hurts a little bit. So I wonder if what this is all getting at, and I'm just spitballing here, but I wonder if one of the options on the table for Apple is to take their base model, the iPhone 14 or 15 or 16 or whatever it is. What is it this time? I've lost track now.
14.
It's a 14. It's a 16.
Well, only if they can
15,
count.
But iOS 16. But
remember,
iPhone
there was
14.
No 9, so
they got to change these numbers. So imagine, just follow me here for a second. What if they don't? What if they lower the price on that one? What if that one starts with a cut rate that is $749 or something like that? So they can say that the iPhone starts at a low price while at the same time introducing a new higher priced iPhone Max or Plus and potentially even raising the prices of the Pro models. That would be one way to get the line to seem affordable but actually be more expensive.
Stretch the price gamut. Because you're right. They always talk about starting at. And they know that's the number that you're going to see, and that needs to be a low number. You don't think they'll bite the bullet and just say everything's $100 more?
I mean, I think that's the most obvious solution is for them to just raise the prices on everything. But if they and like I said, I would be surprised if they
go home. I mean, you know,
but they could play that trick where they have a base model with low storage configuration that doesn't satisfy almost anybody, but it allows them to say it starts at $699 or $749. I could see them doing that.
The psychological trick. Yeah. And the SE doesn't do it because everybody knows that's not the phone you want.
I can believe it because there's one area in which Apple, I think engineering-wise, can't innovate and they can't compete. They cannot make a $500 phone that is a patch on Samsung and Google's like $500 phones. It's like I just don't think that they've cultivated the knowledge of here's what we can sacrifice, here's the efficiencies that we can make, here's how we can deliver a $500 phone or even a $350, $400 phone that almost every user who walks into a phone store in America is going to say, oh my God, this is great, this is wonderful, this is everything that I want, and I get to walk out of here with a little bit more money in my pocket or without having to extend my bill a little bit more than that. So I could definitely, and also the people who come in for iPhones, they come in for iPhones. I mean, Samsung is competing with OnePlus, they're competing with Motorola, they're competing with every other maker of a really good $300 to $500 phone. I really think that Apple is really only competing with whatever they sold this person the last time and whether they can deliver something that really seems to be worth putting another $700, $800, $900, God forbid, $1,400 into new hardware.
We've always said that Apple doesn't want to make a low-cost phone, but that's, I guess, proven untrue by the SE. But they like being in the luxury market. How much does China impact this? iPhones now make up half of all premium smartphones sold in China. They finally surpassed the local Chinese manufacturers. How? I mean, China is important to Apple, right? Jason, you do the color graphs.
Yeah, I mean, it is an important market for them. It's not just for manufacturing. It's also for selling into their, you know, very much growing middle class. They have a middle class that is a potential iPhone target market that's like the size of the entire U.S. population and growing. And that's all good for them. And they do have success getting new people. It is an untapped market for them in a lot of ways, where there are still a lot of new to iPhone buyers and new to Mac buyers coming into the Chinese market. I will say that there is at least this tendency to view the Chinese market as being driven by design changes. So the idea being that is one market where the brand new look really drives sales, which would be next year potentially.
Yeah, because it's a status.
Because this is year three of this design.
Yeah. That has Apple ever gone 3 years with the same design before?
Yeah.
That's not unusual.
You could argue the 6S7 was pretty similar. I mean, aside from the antenna bands on the outside, it was pretty same body style.
So it hasn't always been that TikTok thing where you do 2 years, then you update the design.
And arguably, the 10, 10S, and then the 11 Pro was kind of the same design, and then they ticked over into the 12, 13, 14. So, yeah, I think they've stretched out. As they've added models, they've also sort of stretched out the design window for their generations.
According to the now discredited report, the iPhone 4, no, it's not, will come in green, purple. I saw that purple. I don't know. Blue, black, white, and red. That's the regular one. The Pro will come in green, purple, silver, gold, and graphite. Of course, silver, gold, and graphite always have been premium colors. You know, the poor people like purple and green and blue. I also heard a red this year.
A product red?
Well, no, they said a new red, a newly new designed red.
Yeah,
but this is the silly season, you know. Everything, all bets are off this week.
Although, to be fair, rumors get a little bit more interesting in the couple of weeks before the actual announcement, because now Apple has to open the gates to a lot of people that they absolutely would not trust with any information until they absolutely have to release things to. This is when you start to see leaks from people who have access to whatever the display ad is going to be on a carrier's local website in a few days' time. So this is the time where if I hear something really ridiculous like 5 days beforehand, I will still acknowledge that it's ridiculous, but it's a different rumor than something that would come 5 months before release, where nobody who has access to something that surprising would risk their job and their subcontractor company's contract with Apple by letting that go.
Today's rumor also said that Apple had a titanium version of the phone, but decided not to release it because of cost.
And what good is titanium either? It's
strong and light.
Antenna problems.
Right.
Yeah, but
antenna problems.
Antenna problems. Plus, you also it's already strong. It's already light. And I don't think people. I think that it's one of those names in a product description that makes watch buyers' eyes light up as, ooh, this is super premium. Look, it's a titanium case. But I don't think that it really is going to affect phone buyers.
It does solve a problem of Apple's own making, ironically, which is their insistence on having that stainless steel on the Pro phone, which is a look that I actually think the Pro phones have looked worse than the regular phones for this entire design cycle. I think the design of the standard phones it's more colorful, it's more interesting. The anodized aluminum looks great, and they're like, no, surgical stainless steel, and that is heavy. So you could then solve that problem by having it be a titanium ring instead. It's premium materials. I can see what they were thinking there, but like to Andy's point, it's not that it doesn't solve a problem. It's that it solves a dumb problem that didn't need to be there in the first place. But still, I could see, Yeah, that seemed like a real stretch, right? Because then you're like, or you could buy the iPhone edition for $17.99. Yeah. It's like, I don't know
gold.
If anybody wants that.
I want a gold iPhone.
Also, I don't put a phone in a case, but almost everybody puts their phone in their case anyway, and they don't see any of this stuff.
Yeah. I forget. I had a purple and a blue phone, but I forgot because they've been in cases since I bought them. So I take them out and I go, ooh, that's pretty. I haven't seen that in a while. So I don't know.
Stephen, I wonder where they're going to put ceramic. That's interesting. So also means they can do different things with the coloration, different things with the engineering of the material.
Is ceramic transparent to antennas? Yes, right? It's not metal.
Yeah, well, the Series 5 Apple Watch was ceramic.
Right.
And that was the last time we saw that material. So there's been lots of people wanting it back because it's been 3-4 years. So I would like to see it. I kind of missed my chance for a ceramic one. I have the titanium, which I do like, but I'm allowed to go for ceramic.
You got to be foolish to buy, and I'm foolish, so I'm in the same group. But you got to be foolish to buy a device that you're going to have to upgrade in a year in a premium material. Like anybody who's really smart was going to buy aluminum, right?
Although I will say the sapphire watch face, as opposed to the Ion X glass on the aluminum, it is more durable. And I got my wife an aluminum model Apple Watch first. She hit it against the kitchen counter the next day, and that screen had a crack. And so switched to the sapphire stainless steel, and at least the display is more durable, even if the finish is not.
You're young. I'll give you some advice as an old married man. Never give your wife the lesser watch.
Yeah,
you
very
always,
true. Very
you always
true.
Give her the better watch.
Yeah, strike one. Yeah.
You gave me aluminum? What are you? We don't know if it was an accident. It may well have been, I'll give you your aluminum Apple Watch.
That was it. Yeah.
So this is to me, this is maybe more interesting even than what's going to happen with the iPhone. There's a pro model watch coming out, right? Or a sport watch.
Yeah, it's supposedly larger display than last year. So it'll be very big. Also premium materials. Honestly, I'm interested to see what story Apple tells, because they increased the display size last year, and maybe the same story this year. But usually a health sensor is usually part of the mix in what Apple announces. Some rumors about a temperature sensor, which, you know, during COVID and then even now, maybe it'd be valuable to know if the temperature rises or falls, accuracy notwithstanding. But curious the health implications of whatever comes in the Series 8.
Yeah.
Name?
Do we have a name?
Watch,
go ahead.
The name is the real thing. So I was talking on my podcast I did with Mike Hurley, Upgrade. We were talking about this, and we talked ourselves into this idea, which is, we were like, what's the name? Is it Max? Is it Pro? Is it Extreme? And I had this moment where I thought, what if there isn't a name? What if it literally is just a third size of Apple Watch, and it's all Series 8, and it's just that comes in three sizes now, essentially small, medium, and large. I don't know if they'll do that, because the rumors are that they may differentiate this thing in terms of features. But it's also possible that the only thing that's different about it is that it's got a bigger screen and a bigger battery.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, I mean, the rumors are that it might be differentiated in terms of only being available in the high-end material in, like, titanium. But that's not, you know, maybe not. But
El
it's intriguing.
Grande.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Ocho El Grande.
Comes with sour cream and guacamole.
We have a burrito. We have a
Series 8 Grande.
We have a macho burrito here at our regular Mexican restaurant, which is
so
as big as your head.
I mean, there are rumors about it being kind of sporty, and I can see a story that they could tell there. We talked about the satellite emergency stuff. I could see a friend of mine, David Smith, took an Apple Watch on a mountaineering trip, basically. And, you know, you can't manage the battery on that thing. And I wonder, like, you could tell a software story where you're like, well, this battery's big enough that we can put it in, like, a low power mode that is still useful and will still track your workouts and locations, but is not going to run out of battery in a day and it'll last for 3 or 4 days or something like that. Like, they could do that. Or, which I think is the simpler version of the story, is it could just be a bigger watch with more battery and cost more. And that's it.
You couldn't do worse than Edition. That was a terrible name. That really said nothing at all.
They really ran the table on bad decisions on that particular.
That was Johnny Ive. I blame Johnny Ive.
But I'm still fascinated by the possibilities, like Jason, about all the different things they could do with it. I do think that I really would love to see Apple really try to do a more ruggedized version of that watch. It would fit in so well with the messaging that they're saying with this, that it's the activity watch. It's for the people who are getting out there and using their bodies, and not all of the things that you do involve like doing mindful yoga exercises and stretches. A lot of it involves being in a kayak that's being pushed towards a rock face by the elements of nature that do not want you here in this canyon, and you're very, very curious whether or not you will survive, let alone your fancy $400 watch. And because it would not only, as a practical thing, it would not only be a practical feature, it would appeal to the person who is, again, going out, even the person when they're going out for beers, like on a Wednesday night, that this person doesn't have like the Apple Watch. They have the ruggedized version of it, because, man, that's how hard this person pulls.
Yeah, that's who it appeals to. Just exactly as you said a while ago, Jason, that the best selling phone is the one with a new design. The best selling watch will be one new design. It's the same reason you see downtown San Francisco filled with 4x4s. They're not going off road. They're not gonna. But you look pretty macho driving that around.
It's a lifestyle choice, and I mean, a lot of Apple is a lifestyle brand. That's part of it, and I think that new stuff. Yeah, there is. If there's a big awesome Max watch, right? Like whatever they call it, it will get adherence. It will absolutely do that. There'll be people who prioritize the battery, and the people who will just be like, "I'm a big guy with a big arm, and I'm going to put a big watch on it." And
I need
like,
a watch with exposed screws that tears the flesh out of my wrist. It's so rugged.
Well, no, that's the G-Shock, right? I mean, how many people bought G-Shocks? Right. That were really jumping out of airplanes,
I will say that I've had the one watch that I've had that has always worked for me has been the G-Shock that I bought 12 years ago, because this damn thing, it will not be destroyed for anything, and I've had misadventures just being me, not being Action Jackson out there, where suddenly the screen breaks, or suddenly there is a crack somewhere, or there's water infiltration because I got caught in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong weather. And I'll be damned. The thing is, when you have that as part of I only have like three watches, maybe four watches. But when you have a ruggedized watch as part of your collection, if I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks, I'm wearing the G-Shock. If I'm going to the beach, if I'm having fun, if I'm doing anything that's really, really active, I'm wearing the G-Shock. So that's not necessarily the adventurous person. It's the one who this new Apple Silicon is great. All these great, so that's great. You should be really proud of it. It's great. But sometimes you just want a watch that will continue to be a watch for as long as you're away from a store and away from your home. And I think that the G-Shock fills that void. And I think that there might even be people like me who are not kayaking towards bare cliff faces who would say that if I'm going to use this for 3 or 4 years, I don't want to have to worry about, oh, I got caught in a downpour, or, oh, I fell off this boat, or I fell off this and got this thing wet. I would even consider spending an extra like $80 if it had that kind of G-Shock sort of promise of this is going to be the hardest thing to destroy. They will find this watch before they find your body. That kind of ad copy,
There is one rumor that scares me, that the whatever they call it, the Macho Grande watch will not use the same watch bands.
I have a lot of solo braided loops that are going to be up for sale.
But they only fit you, Steven. Yeah,
I know, but I loved those solo loops. I went all in on it.
Oh, they're nice.
And, yeah, they're nice.
How many bands do you have, Steven?
I wish I could run and get them. I mean, I got between like a dozen and 15.
Oh, my God. So nobody competes with Rene Ritchie in that category.
No. He's got the maximum amount.
It's not a problem. He can stop anytime he wants.
It's a collection.
I'll just point out that Apple's never maintained size compatibility, right? Like all of the small watch bands are compatible, and all of the what is now the large watch bands are compatible. Not very surprising if they do an even larger size, it would have its own compatibility level.
Break my heart, though.
I don't think it's – I mean, yes, everybody who's invested heavily in watch bands will have to think before they leap to this super big – but maybe it's time for a change. Maybe it's time for something
new. Is that a deal breaker for you, Steven?
No, I mean, I also saw a rumor. Maybe they will fit, like they will actually work with a new Apple Watch, but it just won't look like it's supposed to. It might be just like some kind of weird.
You know, have that skinny band on that giant watch.
Yeah. You can have a silver metal insert on a black watch. It's a fashion.
Oh, God. Now we're talking about dongles for watch bands for Apple Watches. That could be no more perfect Apple accessory. Yeah.
I have an adapter I use.
No, but I will say, like, I could imagine, you know, if there's an Apple Watch Series 8, but if there's a 45 millimeter size, just like the Series 7, your bands will fit. But now if there's a 48 millimeter or 50 millimeter size, then you have to buy a new band for that, just like you would if you went from a 42 to 44 millimeter or something like that.
I guess it's not surprising and it's not awful, but gosh, I have a whole drawer full of those and it'd be sad.
I will say that I kind of wish that they would upgrade the stock plastic band, plastic slash whatever they're saying instead of plastic
more
rubber.
Elastomer. More elastomer.
Exactly. Do it in the accent though.
Which is actually a rubber.
Elastomer.
It's fluoroelastomer.
Yeah.
Is really more because a rubber, I think.
It's cool. It was very, very different. But the thing is, like, there are people who are exercising with this thing on. They're swimming. They're doing active stuff. And that thing fails so much. It's like YouTube started recommending recreational divers who dive underneath, who dive in, like, places where people are boating and swimming. And because they'll come up with, like, fistfuls of, like, hey, I found 8 phones. Hey, look, I found this ring. And every time they find an Apple Watch, it has that exact same band on it. And people who do like certain sports with it do affirm that that thing, once you hit the water, it has a way of getting undone and then falling off your wrist. I think it might be time for a different type of buckle on that.
Even the solo loops? Or is that just like the one that has the buckle clasp mechanism?
I don't know what they're calling it, but the kind that has, it just wraps around. There's a stud that locks into a hole. Right.
That's the sport band.
I did have that problem whenever I'm testing. Sometimes I'll be, it doesn't come off, but I'll notice that something flexed and now the stud is no longer engaged in the hole. It's still holding on fine, but it's not, it's sure. Basically being held on by, you know, rubber against sweaty skin and whatever tension is on the band. So I could see how you're walking around for the rest of the day not knowing that this cuff is not fully engaged, and then when you realize that at some point I lost my Apple Watch, it's 2 hours later. Not that it fell, it's just that it dropped off at some point and you never noticed.
Some solo loops you can buy off me.
Yeah, really? Slightly used solo loops. The only reason I never bought a solo loop is because I wasn't sure about the sizing and I didn't want to get the wrong size. I guess I could go into a store and
I got a wrong size the first time.
Yeah, right. That's what I was afraid of.
There's that map. There's a map on the internet that you can get. John Gruber posted it at some point. You can actually see which dot on the sport band you use and map that to a solo loop size, and it works.
Nice.
Third-party opportunity.
Well, actually, speaking of third-party opportunities, and they are sponsored, but I'm going to give them a plug. Anyway, Nomad has a new sport loop that has a different kind of like a big square stud instead. So I hear Andy typing.
Not me, but I'm not with approval. That is the G-Shock, like, sport band.
Yeah. It looks more like a tank. good. Oh,
Apple, by the way.
Sorry, again? Singing?
The tool that Jason was talking about is from Apple. Like, you can actually, when you're going to buy a band, there's actually a PDF you can download, print it out, and then you cut out this paper.
I don't want a tape measure. I never trusted that.
Oh.
And you got it wrong, right? The first one was wrong. I want the thing that says, where's the hole on your sport band?
Yeah, so Gruber, I put a link in our chat on Daring Fireball. He actually has a thing with pictures where it shows sport bands lined up against Apple's sizing chart. And, I mean, it's not 100%, but I used this to find my size and it worked fine. This is the idea of, like, what hole do you put the little nubbin through on the sport band? And what does that mean in terms of what size it is for you?
Yeah, see, I don't want to. Yeah.
what hole do you put your nubbin through?
Where should I put my nubbin?
That's right. What color is your nubbin?
It turns out sport band holes, according to Gruber, this is 2 years old, but I finally, thanks to you, I'm seeing it, do map exactly to the solo loop sizes. So you could just figure out which is which.
Yeah, you're using the large or the small and then figure it out. So I use the small and I'm on hole number 4, so that being size 4.
I've always wanted
that works.
a solo loop, and I've always been too afraid to get one. I have small phobias.
And be sure to use the photo. Actually, be sure to use the photo for your size, because I said that wrong. I am a nubbin number 4, so I'm a size 6, and I am a size 6. That works for me, the sport loop.
Okay. Yeah.
But don't buy it yet, Leo. Wait until you see what Apple Watch.
I'm going to wait, because if I have to get new bands, but I do like those solo. Do you like the solo loops, Stephen? They're nice. They're comfy, right?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, I'm wearing one right now. This is the
Oh, look
the
how
lemon
pretty that looks. And there's no buckle, so it's just not going to fall off.
Yeah.
And so I do all the braided solo and the floor elastomer solo loops. I love them.
Yeah.
They get a little relaxed over time. I find that after about a year, they're a little janky. Yes.
That's why I get them a little tight. At first, and then they get comfortable a few months later.
Apparently, according to the Encyclopedia Britannica, fluoroelastomer polymers are swollen by ketones and ethers, attacked by steam, and become glassy at temperatures not far below room temperature.
Wow.
So be careful with it's the
so
same
arduous.
It's the same chemical as in Teflon. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Does
it
sound like it's like a Game of Thrones happening at a molecular level?
Yeah, I was waiting for the end, which is, you know, they lay 1,000 fluoroelastomer eggs, but only a few dozen make it to the sea.
Wait, just beware, winter is coming. Fluorocarbon elastomer. Synthetic rubbers made by copolymerizing various combinations of vinylidene fluoride, hexafluoropropylene, and eye of newt. Yeah, it is in there.
I gotta hand it to Apple for the fluoroelastomer band. I remember when they announced it, and we're all like, yeah, you got a rubber watch band, whatever. I've been wearing cheap rubber watch bands for so long, and it's nice. Like, it is, is actually, I did not believe it until I first tried it, and it's like, I have some other watch bands, but like that basic fluoroelastomer band is good. It does not feel cheap at all. It's kind of, you know, now I know that it's lived an arduous life to get to the point where it's on my wrist, and I appreciate that. Thank you, Apple Watch Band.
Thank you, Apple Watch Band. No, I am going to wait, because I think I am going to be suckered in by the tank watch, and that probably means I need new bands. But this is a chance for me finally to get my solo loop. How does the braided loop, does that start to stretch a little bit too?
I don't wear them as often, but I think I would get it tight, you know, not tight, but don't get it loose. If it's loose at first, it's too big. You know, get it a size small.
The braided does get relaxed over time too. I think a little more than the solo loop, but the braided loop is so nice. Like it looks pretty. It's beautiful.
Can you wear it after Labor Day is my only question.
Depends on the color.
Get the abyss blue.
As long as it's not the seersucker band, you're good.
Okay.
unless you're Thomas Wolfe, in which case you're good.
Anything more to say about? Oh, we haven't talked about AirPods. Do you think the FDA finally has moved on over the counter hearing aids, and starting in October they will be legal? And I'm wondering if Apple is going to take this opportunity to start pushing the notion that AirPods could be they will never call them hearing aids, but could be used for more than just listening to music.
And they already talk about, you know, conversation boost in AirPods. That's something you can do even now. And especially with voice isolation features and things like FaceTime. So they're already having that in the conversation. But I cannot wait for AirPods Pro 2. It's been, you know, very long in the tooth. The first one, if you got one on day one, battery is not good on the AirPods Pro. So I'm expecting we should see that. If not this event, I mean, this fall at least. But I think this event it's going to happen.
I don't get excited about AirPods because it's just they seem to me overpriced. There seem to be lower cost earbuds that work better to me. Maybe I'm wrong.
My problem with it is that I've tried a lot of $200 in earbuds, and they sound great. But my problem with them is that at some point that little battery is going to die, and you're out $200 because there's no replacement. There's just no way.
Yeah,
to
that's
take
kind
it apart
of shocking.
And,
yeah.
And that's why, like, my personal sweet spot for those kind of devices is about $100, because I'll spend $25 to $30 a year for that kind of availability, where after 3 years I might be eager for an upgrade after 3 years. If I spent $250 for like really good Sony in earbuds, and after 2 years of regular use, again, they're perfectly good. It's just that this tiny battery is irreplaceable and doesn't hold a charge anymore. I'd feel like a pretty big snickerdoodle.
I would want to highlight there's a company called the Swap Club, And if you go to the swapclub.com, they actually have a proprietary technology they use to swap batteries in AirPods. And so you can actually mail them your AirPods with poor battery life, and they will send you a pair with a refurbished battery. You don't get your exact AirPods back because it takes some time to actually replace those batteries, but you will get, and it's much cheaper than buying a brand new pair of AirPods.
It's $50. Yeah.
It's $50, but like, you know, 100, you know, 120 or 150 for new AirPods. They're still adding some of the newer models like AirPods 3, and I'm not sure if AirPods Pro are available just yet, but I did those with my original AirPods a couple of years ago, got a refurbished model from them, and the battery lasted again. I gave it to one of my kids, and they used it for a couple more years. So there, nice. There's getting to be some services to last a little longer, give a little more.
So the theory is, you're going to send in your AirPods. They're going to send you same generation ones that somebody else sent in earlier that they had time to replace the battery. Then they're going to take Correct. The ones you sent them, replace the battery, send them to somebody else. So you're not getting yours back. Do they clean Correct. The earwax out?
It is very clean. It was much cleaner than the AirPods I sent
yeah,
to them.
Yeah, I know it was. Okay, good.
It worked out well.
Okay, so they. Yeah. I guess when you're taking them apart to put in a battery, you probably have the opportunity.
You got to feel sorry for the intern at that company who gets the job up. By the way, it's your job to break open all these incoming boxes.
They do the same thing.
But it's a great company.
This is cool. And they do the same thing with phones. So.
Leo, I love that you pointed out the hearing aid thing, because I do all of our talk over the years about the Apple Watch has included this idea that there are medical features that Apple wants to do, but they have a totally different regulatory process for those, right? And that's what we said about how, like, blood oxygen is kind of like they don't really tell you the number, and they say you shouldn't use it in the ECG. You could only use for certain things and all that. The beauty of this ruling about the hearing aids thing is that I think Apple really does want to add software and hardware features or make claims about features that are already there in terms of improving your hearing, even when you're not listening to something else, being able to do things to process the hearing, the sound that's going into your ears. And they couldn't, because it, beyond a certain point, I think it gets them classified as a hearing aid.
Exactly.
So I would not be surprised Absolutely. At all if their marketing changes, whether it's with this particular product or it's down the road. I feel like that is a signal to Apple and all of its competitors who make these things that the doors are like wide open to any innovation they can have in terms of making, you know, hearing boost features for earbuds.
I like the idea of them making a bespoke product as a over-the-counter hearing aid. I've only talked a little bit to people who designed this hardware about, I think it was like a year and a half, 2 years ago when I was asking around about like what could like a standard iPhone or a standard like smart Android phone do for hearing processing. And they said that one of the problems is not the on-device processing. It really is the directionality and the nature of the microphones that are built into the thing. Where it left me thinking that maybe the stock, as good as the microphones are, the microphones that were designed for noise cancellation and dodgy phone calls is not going to deliver the sort of thing that at least Apple would like to deliver if they're saying that, hey, this is an over-the-counter hearing aid. And also, just as when we were talking about photography, I'm fascinated by what Apple could do computationally with this problem. And I have the same sort of wonder about what Google could do with it, because these are both in their wheelhouse. Apple's biggest strength being that they know how to make a consumer product that is useful, comfortable, doesn't require a lot of maintenance, doesn't require a lot of setup. And the ability to deliver, to expand their health portfolio this way by not creating, hey, we add another bullet item to the features of the AirPods. We actually are creating a set of $110 AirPods that also has $230 worth of hearing aid features added onto it. That fascinates me.
And I will say their software for voice isolation, if you use Final Cut out there, and you ever need to remove noise or echo, the voice isolation feature was just added a couple months ago, and it is incredibly good. You can even crank that up to like 80%, and it does not make your voice sound robotic. And that's the same kind of technology that Apple's putting into its FaceTime calls and could put into things like AirPods. Actually, I recorded a podcast at Podcast Movement last week at the conference. Lots of room noise, lots of background noise, and I actually dragged the audio into Final Cut just to use voice isolation because it's that good. So if you've not tried it yet, it's a sneaky good feature, and I can see Apple rolling that out to more products.
I'm sorry, John Ashley. We make him use Premiere.
Well, nobody's perfect. It's all right.
I'm sorry. On a Windows machine, no less. But we did get you new machines, okay? Yes. You're finally getting off Windows 8.
Your vision is clearer for the tears you have
specifically
shed.
Specifically
8.1. There's a difference. But we're going from 8.1 to, are you going to 11 or are you going to go to 10? Goes to.
We're going to 11.
Goes to 11?
Yep, we are 11.
That's nice.
Turn it up to 11.
We treat you well, don't we?
It depends on how you view 11.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I do think Apple will promote Live Listen, which they've always had, more. And maybe it'd be interesting to see if they do add, is there, you know, Samsung's have this sound test feature, Adapt Sound, where you actually put in whatever headphones you're going to use, and they do, like the audiologist does, tones, and you say, yeah, I hear that. No, what? Huh? And then they do a curve, and then you can actually turn, say, on your phone, that's how it should always be. Does Apple do anything? I've never seen anything like that. I've seen third-party apps that do that on iPhone.
You can do it with the AirPods Pro. There's actually like a feature. Yeah, if you click the little I next to AirPods Pro, like in your Bluetooth settings, there is some kind of tuning you can do, and it will try to adapt.
It's not the one where it looks in your ear and tells you what you can hear, right? Because you can't do that with a phone, which is really dopey.
No.
Okay.
I will say, actually, because AirPods Pro has been out for so long, I did get to try these Beyer Dynamic. It's one of their first in-ear wireless.
They're a very good headphone. I've used their over-the-ear headphones for years. They're very good.
These are very good, very competitive with the AirPods Pro, and they actually do an even deeper test for your hearing where they'll play the beeps at all different frequencies.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm like stressing because I don't want to miss a beep, you know, you do the whole test. But these sound very good, and they have that kind of tuning built in.
Okay, just a tip, do not lie on your hearing test. It's in your interest.
Yeah, I heard it.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah.
I heard that.
Yeah. You try to get the rhythm, and you just say yes.
So you're a musician, so I presume that you pay attention to, you know, quality of audio. What are you wearing right now?
These are the Beyer Dynamic DT770 Pros.
Those are really good headphones.
I love these. And, you know, obviously, I have AirPods Max as well. And for music listening, I actually, when they first came out, did a video with classical musicians who play in an orchestra here in Central Florida. And the classical musicians loved how the AirPods Max sounded for some of their favorite pieces.
Really? But they're Bluetooth. They're highly compressed. They're not, it's not, this is why I'm a fan, really, honestly, of wired headphones. I know I can't
use them. Are you downloading FLAX and like running it wired?
I have a DAC that I plug into the Lightning port, and then it converts it to headphones, and then you can plug in, and you can plug in good wired headphones, like those big Biodynamics. And I always think that sounds better than any Bluetooth ever, including the AirPods Max, which I... Mm-hmm. Silly $550 waste.
That could change this year. They got really good codecs coming
Bluetooth
up.
Bluetooth LE.
That are designed to address that. And I'll be honest. Like I did buy like earlier this year, like a DAC and some like entry
there you
level,
go. Those
like,
are good hi-fi mans. Those are good.
They are really good. But I find that my usage of them is when I really want to sit and enjoy and appreciate music.
That's right.
Meaning that is the focus of my activity for almost everything else.
Well, that's because they're too expensive to wear them anywhere else.
Okay, that too. let me put it this way. I did not buy for these $80 like Sony headphones that I use all the time for podcasting.
Yeah. No, I'm the same way. I have a Hi-Fi Man 560s, and I wear when I use a good DAC and wear those, they're fantastic.
But yeah, HD, like high resolution audio, uncompressed on a good DAC and a good pair of headphones. I do think that this entry level DAC and headphone is as good as I can appreciate. I think that if I spent another $1,000, I would get maybe 3% more noticeable improvement for my
40.
Hearing.
Yeah, that's the
right.
Problem.
Exactly. Yeah. But at this level, yeah, absolutely. When I'm still hearing things in recordings that were not there before, where it's like I listen to a lot of opera that's like studio recordings of great singers, and now I can hear them like doing things like with their breathing that not disruptive, but it makes it more. You feel like you're in the room. It's like specifically this is the what was happening inside that room at the time.
I don't consider a broader frequency range because I'm old. I'm a lot older than you even, and my high ends are gone and all that. But there's an openness and a definition, and the instruments are clearly distinctive in ways that lesser headphones just don't do.
Compressed, not quite a question.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, see, and that's the problem I have with Bluetooth. Now, I'll be interested because Apple, could announce this. Nobody's talked about it. According to a 9to5 Google, Pixel 7 is going to have or possibly have this new Bluetooth LE audio with a new codec, the LC3 codecs, that are much better than the standard highly compressed Bluetooth audio that you get on an iPhone. Apple's always been a little laggard, frankly, in the Bluetooth codecs.
Well, there was a rumor, I think it was almost a year ago now, that the next AirPlay codec, AirPlay 3, could include like a high-fidelity audio to something like an AirPods Max or AirPods Pro.
Oh.
And with some of the ultra-wideband that Apple is doing, like with AirTags and things like that, that technology could be used to maybe transfer that audio. Bluetooth could be like a backup. So if you don't have an Apple device and you want to connect it just to whatever other music player, you can. But that Apple will have some kind of AirPlay 3 technology for that high-end audio.
That would be great. AirPlay is always preferable to Bluetooth because it uses Wi-Fi, so it's far less compressed. But I guess I'll have to get new $550 AirPod Pro Max, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Along with your new solo loops.
Sigh.
Add it all in the, put it all in the car.
Sigh.
Also, what solution are you using to isolate your chair from the floor? Because that really is a part of the path that a lot of people would ignore.
Oh, no. I have a butt kicker in my chair. I don't want to. I want to feel it. Anything else, Apple? So the AirPods, there's an opportunity there. We'll see what they do to talk about, you know, for hearing loss or just higher fidelity. We didn't mention the hole punch, but camera is going to be a big deal on the new iPhone. Apple Watch.
I'm sorry, one quick note. If Apple were to announce something about the hearing loss being able to be improved with AirPods, maybe they wouldn't be able to. They wouldn't be able to announce it until October when the FCC's ruling goes into effect. They might hint at it and then actually push out an update in October.
I think that's correct. Yeah, because it's not until next month or the month after next, I guess, since we're still in August. Any other, you know, here's the thing I always like to do before I go into a reality distortion field. I like to armor myself with cynical thoughts. No, I like to armor myself with things to watch out for, you know. You know, look for the graphs with no zero at the bottom, things like that. Anything we should perhaps armor ourselves with before? I guess we're going to have one more show before next week, so we could do that next week. But I do feel like there's always a certain amount of, I don't know, unreasonable. What did the Greenspan
irrational
call
exuberance?
It? Irrational exuberance. Yeah. Yes.
I'm more curious to see if they tried to get out some messaging about how good the App Store is and how secure it is. And also about how, if they're trying to basically prepare the ground for all the fights they might have to fight against the FTC and the DOJ over the next year. So that would be interesting.
That is the big rumor, of course. And since this is the all rumor episode, I guess we can mention it. That Apple, that the DOJ is approaching an antitrust suit against Apple. This, I think, should be taken with a grain of salt because it's almost certain they're investigating it. But the decision to pull the trigger, this is from Politico. Justice Department lawyers are in the early stages, that's the giveaway right there, of drafting a potential antitrust complaint against Apple. But of course, you know, you can put that whole thing together and then the AG or somebody below the AG could say, yeah, no, I don't think so.
Yeah. But there was also similar rumors. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Stephen.
I was going to say, I think Epic Games gave it a pretty good go, you know, for a while to try and push that. And Apple just basically got out of it just having to be able to link out.
They won, you know, in almost every respect. Yeah.
Pretty much. They just have to allow developers to put a link in their app, which on the face of it seems, you know, you should be able to do that. So I don't see any kind of major thing happening for a while.
That's what Politico points out. The Apple was willing to spend ungodly amounts of money to defend itself against Epic. Imagine what they'd be willing to spend to defend themselves against the DOJ. Yeah, and remember how long it took the DOJ to get Microsoft to cave. I mean, years and years and years and years and years.
But all I was going to say was that there was a similar rumors coming out that I don't know whether it was the FTC or the DOJ. I think it was the DOJ was also getting ready to file papers against Google. And Google has a lot more exposure than Apple does. These are interesting because last year, if we were talking about this time, last year I would have seen it as a much bigger threat for those companies than they do right than I do right now, because the FTC and the DOJ have certain independent powers they don't have to get from Congress to enforce their mandates. But however, support for bringing down big tech is not as big as we thought it might be for over the last year or two. And a lot of I've been reading that both of these organizations are like, we have a certain limited amount of political capital to spend. Where are we going to spend it? Where can we get the best results? And there's a lot of talk about how trying to get Google and Apple and Facebook to bend the knee is maybe not the best use of their resources.
Yeah, there's also the question of just from politics perspective, in an era where there's a rising international tension and you've got a tech industry that's got the things that are strong in the U.S. and the things that are not strong in the U.S., you've got two U.S. players here that are dominant in their category. And on one level, you could say, but they're too dominant. But politically, there's also that idea of like, well, wait a second, we're going to hurt our guys. When there's so many other challenges out there. And I wonder about that politically, if they're like, yeah, let's let our giants continue to do what they're doing and maybe be reluctant to get into a long battle over that.
But it could be good for consumers and could be good for developers because we've been seeing over the past 2 or 3 years, there are a lot of things that were kind of comedic about Epic's lawsuit. But ask yourself if Apple was planning already on saying, well, why don't we waive our 30% percentage for people who are making less than a million royalties a year? What if we were to actually let these companies link out from their pages? Like, these are things that Apple only did when they felt as though they need to give up something, because Apple is not necessarily looking out for your interests when they think that you're between them and another big sack of money.
Yeah, it's not like somebody woke up at Apple and said, you know what, 15% seems better than 30. Let's do that today. Yeah. Right? They're feeling the pressure. And it's the only time that they've really revisited anything they've done since 2008, I feel like, is when they feel that pressure. Whether, you know, and I'm skeptical that any court remedy would actually make sense or benefit people necessarily in the long run, and it would take a lot of time and cost a lot of money. But that added pressure is the thing that makes potentially Apple and or Google modify their policies.
I'm sure we'll have more rumors in the next 7 days.
Oh, man.
So we have something, I hope we do, so we'll have something
fresher
to talk
rumors
about next Tuesday, because we have 8 days to the Apple event. Here's another rumor. Mark Gurman tweets, Apple Watch changes coming to all modern Apple stores, watch band display shelves, modular wall panels, and sliding shelves. And remember the glass-covered watch tables they came up with when the Apple Watch first came out? They'll be replaced with a new table where devices can be touched. That'll be in the September through December timeframe. So new ways to try on and look at. I haven't been in an Apple store in 2.5 years.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see.
The only thing they really opened up.
Have they? Yeah. Well, that's Florida. You're in Florida, dude.
Yeah. A couple months ago, I went, and it was, you know, it was like a Who concert again. You know, just a bunch of people everywhere.
Who concert? Have you ever been to a Who concert?
No, never. I don't go to,
Who concert?
I don't know why.
That's a really interesting reference. I have been, by the way, to Who concerts. And you're right. Okay, they're just like Apple stores. Maybe it goes the other way, you know, and a Who concert's just an Apple store.
Right.
All I'm hoping for changes to the Apple Store is that they change the design of that. You ever use those tables where you want to plug in to power, but you can sense that there is some sort of a cutout somewhere, but you don't know how to flip it up. And then you're told, oh, just put your hand here, and you always put it in the wrong place. That's the only times I've ever been like angry inside of an Apple Store, which is just put a plug right here that I can plug into, and don't have to make an appointment with a Genius Bar to show me exactly where to hold my hand in order to make this thing magically flip open. It's great, it's beautiful, it's clever, but not as clever as an exposed power outlet.
I have to say, I like Michael Stieber's response to this Gurman tweet. Stieber, who did the Apple Store timeline, says, Mark, this is how I know you're not listening to you subscribe to my newsletter. We've been talking about this for months, Mark, get it. To which Mark says, I know, this is your domain. You're the man. Stieber did that amazing Apple Store timeline website that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Okay, Did anybody read the Tim Cook edited edition of Popular Mechanics this month? he also did an interview, How to Build Tomorrow. It's kind of cool. I guess Tim Cook, when he was a kid, read Popular Mechanics and was like a big fan of it. He says, I was terribly interested in things like this, from cars to space travel. He says, it got me interested in the, and many of us will remember this, the 50-in-1 Tandy Science Fair Radio Shack kit.
Yep, I had that.
Did you have that? Me too.
Yes, it was amazing. But the ability to put together circuits just by the super clever system of just here is some interconnect, a big bag of interconnect wires. Each one of these components is hard mounted onto a board with a tight spring on each end. So just slide the wires to make the electrical connection between inside these springs. And oh my goodness, the first time that I got like a 7-segment LED to actually do something was, oh my God, it's the number 3. Okay, I was trying to do the number 8, but still.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
You can get them on eBay. I don't know if Tandy is even around to make those. That's cool.
But yeah, that's I'm glad they asked those questions, because to me, like, if I I haven't gotten like a lot of like extended interviews with like executives in the past couple of years, but if I had time, the question I would always ask is, what did you make anything when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Not even necessarily what your hobbies, but is there something you used to make? And I have had like the CEO of Asus, like, went into like 30 minutes of extra innings telling me all about like all the stuff that he used to like to make, because it takes you off your game and you learn a lot more about what this person thinks is important. And I mean, I have to admit that I did not read this particular interview, because I won't say that I'm so cynical that I know that it's all just PR fluffery, but it's you like to see the human side of CEOs to try to get an idea of exactly what they think and why they make the decisions that they decide to make.
I think Tim was a little bit more open to Popular Mechanics than he would have been to a tech publication, because they were really talking about projects. They asked him, can you think about an Apple product that when you first heard about it, you said, that's cool. And Tim says, oh, that happens all the time. I feel like that every day, like a kid in a candy store. And I don't think he would have said this to Kara Swisher. We were talking in the hallway about M1 and M2. The history there goes back well over a decade. It goes back to the genesis of the M chips or the A chips from the iPhone. Actually, it goes farther back than that, Tim. It goes back to the Apple Newton. Really getting in and figuring out, how do you put a powerful chip in something that small and not get it to heat up and burn up? Then he goes into a little bit more corporate speak. Yeah. But you could see the Tim Cook, the enthusiasm for invention and you know, messing with things come through. And I think that's kind of cool. Then he goes, we strongly believe privacy is a basic human fundamental right, blah, 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 blah.
Well, and I was actually going to mention, I mean, privacy, even though that's kind of the, you know, he says it all the time. And I do think it is important to the company. And I believe it when he says it, because in the HomeKit and smart home world, we cover a lot of different devices from different manufacturers. And when it comes to privacy and security, that's one of the reasons why I have gone all Apple HomeKit and some of the news that came out
recently.
Absolutely.
Yes.
You know, Amazon allows law enforcement to request Ring doorbell video without a warrant. You know, there's actually a website where law enforcement can go request that. And that's the kind of privacy that I do believe Apple when they say it. And that's why I do trust things like HomeKit, and that stands out from the pack. And it is a selling feature, but it is not like probably the most profitable thing that they do. But I appreciate that he still sticks by it.
Do you have a doorbell that works with HomeKit?
A HomeKit secure video doorbell, the Logitech Circle View, and you don't even hook it up to Logitech. There's no Logitech app. It only connects to your HomeKit home with your Apple TV or your HomePod, and it's HomeKit secure video. So any video recordings is saved to iCloud, which is great. You don't have to pay a separate subscription. It's just, you know, it's in iCloud Plus, you know, if you pay for iCloud storage. And I can trust privacy and security. There's no other company that has access to that doorbell camera.
So they make regular cameras, but they also make a doorbell.
I actually have that camera, which is the Circle View camera. Again, works the same way with HomeKit Secure Video, but they have the Circle View doorbell, and it's the same kind of thing.
Somebody was asking on the radio show. Actually, he was asking, can I get something that doesn't have a monthly subscription, like the ring or the nest. Yeah. But more than that, I think just not send my videos to anybody who asks for it would probably be also an important important feature.
If I don't trust Amazon at all. I actually trust them less than I trust Facebook when it comes to privacy, because I do think that they are the most garbage disposal of, we are going to take anything that we can possibly get from anybody under any circumstances, whether they think that we have a right to it or not. Nonetheless, that was in terms of they let the police have access to that data without a warrant or without notifying the person. That was 11 times in the first half of the year on a device that sold in the millions. And also the only time they do it, and Google has the same thing in their user terms, is that if doing so will save lives in an active emergency situation, like there is a shooter in the neighborhood, that's the times where they 11 times said, yes, we will allow access.
That hackers have tricked them into you, and using that loophole got them to release video. So,
and that's not the only data. You know, Amazon will actually is able to see like your Wi-Fi network name, whatever you name your camera. They'll take that information. And now that Amazon has purchased iRobot, which makes the Roomba vacuums that literally map your house.
It does seem to be moving faster and faster.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Especially because iRobot, like 3 or 4 years ago, when they were building up that business, I think the CEO actually said that we think that the data that's being collected about room layouts and of individual houses would be commercially useful to like social networks and other people. So yeah, this is why that I really wish the FTC will step in on this acquisition, because I would trust Apple with this data. I don't think they would seek it. I would even trust Google with it conditionally, but Amazon is the one company where there is no way in hell this will work out well for me if they know what the actual map layout is, and they actually have access to a robot that is probably also can also deliver data to give a sense of who is in what room when on what sort of schedule. So
I'm tempted by the idea of having it through HomeKit, but there is since I use a Synology NAS and Ubiquiti networking, I could do local. That's what you do, John, right?
Yeah.
In fact, that's what we do in the studio, where it's all local.
I have the same setup,
local
too.
Storage.
I have a Synology and a Ubiquiti unified network in my house.
Yeah. So I was thinking maybe getting instead the Ubiquiti doorbell, which doesn't send it to the cloud at all. I'm the cloud.
The solution if you don't want a subscription, right?
Yeah.
You do a setup where you're doing local recording.
It's a lot of work. I mean, I have to run Ethernet out to outdoor cameras and stuff. But right now, I have Google Nest cameras everywhere. I have a Google Home, Nest doorbell. And I'm thinking, I'm sending this all to Google. I was Amazon Ring, and I thought, well, I'll do that. Now I'm thinking maybe I should just bite the bullet and start stringing Ethernet around.
Well, the Ubiquiti cameras can do power over Ethernet,
PoE,
which is really
yes.
nice.
Yeah.
But if you run the Ethernet, you got data and power to all the cameras.
That's what I was thinking. So I'll go up in the attic, punch a few holes.
That's it. Do it.
Put on your Schneider belt. Yeah.
Get the keychain that goes, and I'm ready. Yeah, I'm ready. So that's a big project, but that's something I've been kind of thinking about. John Slanina, that's what you do, though, right? Throughout your house, yeah. Do you have a video doorbell?
No.
No.
But I have power over Ethernet
cameras. I don't care so much about the cameras. The doorbell is the best thing because it says, Lisa's home or whatever. There's a package. And I like
if you're watching your Apple TV and someone rings the doorbell, you'll literally get the picture and
get
picture
the video.
The doorbell right on your TV. You can use it. And your HomePods can be used as doorbell chimes, and you can select which HomePods you want to be used for that. So it's a great system.
It's very cool. Yeah. And a lot, I think if you're listening to Mac Break Weekly, you're probably all in on Apple. So that seems like, that's kind of always the choice, right? I could do it myself and really have privacy, but that's going to be a lot of work and great expense. Or I can I can find somebody I trust and let them do it.
Absolutely.
Work. Yeah. It's not raining in Florida. Okay.
No, nice. It is not. It's a nice day, and you can talk back through the doorbell you can with other doorbell cams. So recording, it's nice.
That's really cool. I do love having a doorbell camera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially for I'm in the middle of a podcast or it's like the number of times where it's like if it is an emergency, if you are wearing fire repellent, if you're carrying a hose and you're in firefighter gear, yes, I will get up and unlock the door for you before you break it down. But
it can do the facial recognition for your iCloud photo library. So
that's cool.
And it's, yeah, you know, it's private and secure because it's all Apple, but I've had people ring the doorbell. Like one of my sons will just ring it for whatever reason. They live here, but I don't know why they're ringing the doorbell. Anyway, they'll ring it and it'll say, you know, so-and-so's at the door and it's my son and I get the notification, but I can also be comforted knowing it's private and secure and it's all through the iCloud.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm sending pictures of all my friends to Google. So,
yeah,
it's, they even say that they say in some states this may be illegal and then go ahead.
Yeah. It's weird. I think that this is part of this, what needs to be part of the new social contract too. Like I don't have my doorbell camera actually points across the hall to the door of one of my neighbors. And so like twice when people have moved in, I save it for the second introduction, not the first one, but the second one's, oh, by the way, I have a doorbell camera. If you want me to turn it off so that it doesn't like catch you coming and going, that's fine. I pull up my phone and show it's actually tied to a zone. So it doesn't actually record anything until someone steps right in front of my door.
Right.
But it is like a camera that lights up with a little green LED that whenever you take a step out of your door, you have the right to know that no, it's not recording you or tell me to. Could you please just like put some blinkers on it? It's tough. I mean, I was just going to say that I got I'm having problems with my Plex media server, which I absolutely love, but they did some sort of an update where there's a security setting on my NAS that it doesn't like. So under many circumstances, it's not letting, even when I'm connected to Ethernet, it doesn't trust the connection between the two. And it's like, oh man, if I were just buying everything from the Apple store, from the iTunes store or the Google Play store, I would not have this problem. I would have more problems that I don't want to have, but it's always the question of how much do you want to be secure? How much do you want to be private? And how much do you want to be responsible as the IT department for what is an increasingly complicated network of networked devices inside your house?
Yeah. Yeah. If you have a rack in a closet, then you know you're in trouble.
when you have house guests and you have to ask them, now, how much do you like white noise when you're trying to go to sleep? Because if you like it, this is going
to
be great.
Put
if you
right
don't like it, I'll shut down some servers so that you can sleep.
iFixit says that Apple's self-repair program manages to make MacBooks seem less repairable. We mentioned that the M1 MacBooks were added to the repair program last week, but the guide that Apple sends you is apparently so complicated, 26 steps. Now they do point out that the Surface Pro 6 battery replacement guide is 52 steps, so and that the iPad battery replacement guides can be hundreds of steps, but Apple's MacBook Pro battery replacement, the official one, is 162 pages long.
Yikes.
Wow.
Yeah, this was fascinating. I looked to see what the Touch ID button, if you just wanted to replace the Touch ID button on a 14-inch MacBook Pro, what would it take? And you'd have to enter the serial number for your MacBook. You know, you can't just like shop for parts. You have to use your serial number. You'll be shown parts for your laptop. And you can buy the Touch ID button by itself for $80-something. Because I was trying to make something. I know Jason Snell and Mike Hurley have done like that standalone Touch ID button. So I was kind of looking up. I was like, how much is the part? But in the guide to change the Touch ID button, it said the prerequisites for replacing this is removing the logic board, removing like the trackpad, I think, and removing like the top display. And so, you know, those are just three bullet points in like, now you can work on replacing the Touch ID button and basically disassemble the entire computer. So it does feel intimidating, but listen, if someone wants to do it, Apple has a step-by-step for you.
But maybe Apple's more complete. I mean, so iFixit's guide is 26 steps. Apple's guide is 162 pages, but it's Apple, right? So they're going to be more detailed.
They really cherry picked something here because this is a top case in battery replacement, and Apple says, and I think it's even in that story, Apple says they are working on a straight up battery replacement, but they don't have that right now at launch. You can do that for the MacBook Air and the 13-inch Pro. I believe you can do straight up battery replacements on them, but not the 14 and 16 yet. So there's probably a less complicated way to do it. I think, you know, I don't know. If there's a way to do it in fewer steps and iFixit can find it, then that's great. Again, you have to ask, who are you as a person? Like, do you want to, are you confident enough to take, if there's a shortcut, do you want to take it, or do you want to follow Apple's advice and do it the official Apple way? Do you want to use, if you go to the trouble of getting an official Apple part, do you want to just follow the official Apple rules? I am replacing a USB-C port on my son's MacBook Pro that I bought him for college, which a friend of his already broke a port on it. Kids. But I'm going to use this system to do it, but it is, I'm going to have to go down to the logic board, and I'm not happy about it. But that's how I have to get, that's how, to get down to where
wow.
I can have access to the USB-C board.
Are you going to stream that?
I have thought about streaming it live, and I thought to myself, this could turn into one man's descent into madness. So I'm thinking
exactly
I might.
Why I asked.
I think I might record it.
I'd like to watch that, Jason.
I think I might record it and see how it goes.
What is Apple? Did Apple say how much they would replace it for? Did you get a quote?
I haven't. And I have Apple. Here's the thing is it would be great content for my website, but. I do yes, have AppleCare Plus on that, so I should probably just call them and say, look, bad yeah. USB port, please fix, and have them do it. I will say, though, the part was $18.
Right.
Sure. Like, I mean, other than my time, and it might take an hour of my time to disassemble it and a lot of sweat, $18 and the computer never has to leave my house versus having my son, you know, like taking the laptop away and saying, I don't know when it'll be back, and going through that process. There is something to be said for it, but you know, I do have that choice to make, and everybody does have that same choice. But I was impressed. Like, again, broken USB port. I'm like, oh man, what am I going to do here? And then I realized, well, I can pay $18 plus shipping and do it myself if I want to, and it'll probably take an hour.
Does it involve soldering?
No, there's no soldering involved. I would be all the way out if soldering was involved. No, it turns out those USB-C ports are just little.
They're
you just
modules.
Unscrew a little hex screw and pop them right off.
That's nice.
It's actually pretty good, yeah.
The problem is, of course, that you have to remove everything to get to it. That's really
yeah,
why it takes
exactly.
You have
yeah.
to really dig
because they've
in.
Stacked it like a layer cake, right? And right. and you start from the underside, and you got to go through all the layers to get access to the thing that you need to pull out. And if it's something that's right at the top, it's real easy. And if it's not, it's not.
That's why there's 162 pages for putting a battery in a MacBook Pro, because there's a lot of stuff that you have to take out to get to the battery. And yeah, you have to replace the cover. It's one part.
Yeah, the top case.
I have built a Lego lunar lander with fewer instructions than that.
That's
impressive.
And that was just for fun.
Yeah.
And look at all the different kinds of screws. There's a Torx T5, T3.
Yeah. I will say, to iFixit's credit, if you can get these, you can buy tools from Apple, but iFixit, if you've got the iFixit kit, you're in good shape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always like iFixit's stuff.
I've replaced a lot of iMac hard drives with SSDs, and, you know, peeling off the display can be, you know, pretty tedious. I'm curious if the M1 iMac will ever make it into the self-repair program.
They told me that the plan was to get desktops into the program. So just like, I mean, the iPhone is already right, like a little bit extra to get into an iPhone to repair it. So compared to that, the iMac is going to be
desktop's easy,
problem. Yeah. But I'm sure it'll be.
Although I didn't do it. I made Colleen do it, but I have watched somebody add a hard drive to an iMac, and it involves large suction cups and things.
Yeah,
it's a very complicated.
It's going to go in through the screen.
I do have to wonder why Apple says that among the things, the tools you need, including torque drivers and cut resistant cloths, you also need a fireproof enclosure. That's not reassuring.
That's the battery. You're worried. That's if you puncture a battery, you can do bad things.
Wow. Okay. A lot of stuff.
Well, see this is the difference between Apple and iFixit. iFixit wants you to be empowered, and they want to sell you tools. And so they're going to be like, you can do this. Go, you. And Apple's more like,
well,
yeah, you can do
you need some sand. And if there's going to be sand, there's going to be a sand container.
Maybe take it to the Apple store instead.
And sticky notes. I don't know. Suction cups. More suction cups. More torque screwdrivers.
Now, do they recommend clear alcohol or like a whiskey?
For drinking or for a cleaning?
Is that for after or is it to steady your hands before you?
God. Apparently there's
at this step, cut the blue wire with the yellow stripe, not the green wire with the white stripe.
And we're only on page 25, kids. I mean, we're already removing keys for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah.
That manual's got every repair.
Oh, it's got them all in here. Yeah. Okay.
That PDF has
And then there. I love it because after you've taken everything apart, then they say, reassemble it. Boom, 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 boom. We're not going to tell you how. Just reassemble it.
No, I mean, each section has a reassembly diagram on it, too.
Okay.
It's all, I looked it up. I had to look it all up. Yeah. One USB-C port.
Yeah.
I want to see how this home repair program continues to evolve. Right now, it seems as though Apple is begrudgingly saying that we don't want to be in front of a regulatory agency saying that we don't make it possible for people to repair their own hardware. However, this is also seems like something that got put together with whatever they had at the moment. I'm wondering what I'm really like to see 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now. If they start designing things not so that it's easy to self-repair, not so that it would be attractive to repair it yourself instead of taking it to an Apple store, but basically to put people in a position where there's probably a really good reason why you decided to fix this at home instead of going to an Apple store, maybe including it being a 4-hour drive to your local Apple store. We have looked for ways that we can make this repair easier to do without compromising the design of the thing. We're going to start to put things that tend to break closer to the top of the layer cake, or we're going to try to use fewer adhesives where we don't necessarily need to use adhesive. I don't think that they're going to ever. It's not that they're going to make something like the Framework laptop, but every time that I try to do a repair or an upgrade. I mean, just this weekend, one of the projects was taking my 2012 Mac Mini in anticipation of replacing it with a new, Apple Silicon Mac Mini, hopefully in October or November, basically saying, well, how can I update this so that I can make use of it when it gets replaced as a desktop Mac? And obviously, one of them is replace the Fusion Drive with an SSD, and that it's not. It's not as hard as on an iMac, but it really is just buried there. It is at the bottom of the pit, and you really do have to take everything apart to get to it. Thank goodness it's all screws, and you can get to it. But this is not designed. They clearly never envisioned anybody other than someone who's wearing a colorful T-shirt with an Apple logo ever trying to access this drive.
Actually, Tim Cook kind of addresses that in the Popular Mechanics interview, saying, "You know, we have to balance." Robustness and reliability with repairability, and one of the reasons it's like this is so that it's robust, that it can handle being thrown around and stuff. Here is, by the way, I hope you have some ESD safe tweezers, Jason, because here is the picture. You're going to
Indeed.
Have to yes.
Yes, but I have the iFixit repair kit. So
checkmate,
Apple.
Checkmate.
And mate.
Yeah. Somebody's saying in the chat room, and I think it may be kind of true, there's a little bit of sour grapes from iFixit, because this 162-page manual is everything, right?
Look, iFixit is a great organization. They are also an advocacy group, right? Like they
Right
to repair.
Yep.
Absolutely the case. But, Apple has given a little bit on this one issue. Is it going to be good enough for iFixit? No, it's never going to be good enough, right? Because iFixit is... It always can envision a world where there's even more and it's more available. And that is what Andy described as the push and pull happens within Apple, and it also happens between manufacturers and iFixit, which is sort of like iFixit's all about repairability. That is a priority for Apple because most Mac repairs and iPhone repairs are done by Apple, right? Like if it's hard, it's harder for them to repair their own devices.
That's true.
But they have other priorities too. And that's that push and pull that's there. And I feel like over the last few years, I've gotten the sense that Apple has actually taken some steps, and even iFixit will acknowledge, taken some steps toward repairability. I suspect that's because Apple realized the cost to Apple of repairing their own devices, and they're trying to ease it a little bit. But they've got priorities that iFixit doesn't have, because iFixit's only concerned about the repairability part and not the fact that, like, you can't make a little AirPod that's repairable that fits in your ear at that size. That's the trade-off there, is you're trading that off, and iFixit doesn't like that. And they shouldn't. I like that they're an advocate for repair.
Yeah.
I also like that I said before that Apple's never going to make a laptop like the Framework laptop, and nor necessarily would everybody want a MacBook that's designed like a Framework laptop, where you can use a couple of simple tools and just do everything, really fix everything you want, upgrade everything you want. Nonetheless, I do think that it's very, very important that a company like Framework exists, because they're making it more difficult for a company like Apple to say, oh, well, look, if we... I know that you are like little children. You want what you want, but trust me, if we designed a MacBook so that you could upgrade or swap out the SSD yourself, you wouldn't want to use it. And then someone can just say, oh, well, here's my Framework laptop, and it's really has the same performance specs, price, weight, thinness as your MacBook, only I can, 2 years from now, I can actually put in a brand new motherboard myself if I want to, let alone upgrade the RAM, let alone replace a busted internal SSD without having to buy a whole new motherboard. So I'm glad that the flow of gravity is towards, let's see what we can do to make these things easier to fix, as Jason said, not only for smoothness from authorized Apple service centers, but also so that, again, also as Jason said, when someone broke something and it seems like something that should be easy to fix without having to do without for a week, or having to wipe the drive to make sure that nothing private leaves the leaves your hands, it should be that should at least be an investigatable option for every user, I think.
When are we going to see macOS Ventura? Will it be in October when they announce new Macs, Jason, or what
is
your best
I think that's
guess?
That's generally the idea, is that it'll be sometime in October, probably that and iPadOS tied to an event where they launch some new Macs and some new iPads. That's been generally when the Mac release has been.
So we're getting close. Are they taking to heart your and others' complaints about the system settings in Ventura? Are they listening?
Who knows? It's a mystery, right? Like, the system settings app in Ventura is so misguided. And I think that's the problem, is that I wrote a couple pieces about this last week, and I had somebody say to me, oh, Jason, I hope they're listening to you. And it's like, you know what? I would bet you a lot of money that there are lots of people who work on the system settings app who feel the same way I do and know Absolutely. The same things that I have suggested about this. A lot of it is just common sense about how it should be structured. And I feel like this is something that was misguided from the beginning at a high level, where some decisions were made about what was going to be okay for a system settings app. And it's like, oh, just do the iPad thing. Just have it be like the iPad and the iPhone, and it'll be fine. And they made some very peculiar decisions, the most peculiar of which being that you're on a Mac. Every Mac has a widescreen display, and they didn't make it wider. So they've got this weird hierarchical thing where you can go one level in, and then you go a second level in, and you don't see the middle level. It's invisible. And it's like, it's so maddening, because you could just make it. So I did a little screenshot where I basically like stretched it with my own hands and said, what if it was wider? Like, imagine if it was
this
a little wider.
This would be great. And this is what Apple created with the way back when, with the Finder and the columns, which is hierarchical.
Steve Jobs' favorite view from Next, and he brought it to the Finder, was the column view. So, yeah. And I think, like, of course the people who are working on this know this, but somebody, whether it's in the design group or a manager somewhere, said, no, we're going to keep it as simple and constrained as possible. This is good enough. And the truth is, it's not good enough. It's really embarrassing. And the thing that really is infuriating about this, I'm getting a little angry now, is system preferences as an app was really bad. Like, it is super old. It was like a little, you know, a little bricolage, like a beaver dam, where like every year they added more junk to it, and it just built up over time for 20 years, all this garbage that would get thrown into the systems pref app every year. And so that's like, look, we need to fix it. We're going to wipe that away and replace it with. And that was the moment to refactor it, reorganize it. And they did nothing but make it look like iOS. And like, making it look like iOS is fine. But like, why is the default browser in like security and privacy or something? It's like they made no reorganizational attempts to have it make sense. And it's a real shame. So I hope that they will take all this criticism that they're getting from not just me to heart, but I despair that the people in charge who think it's fine are the ones who would have to do that. And that even if everybody else is aware that the emperor has no clothes, the person in charge is like, whatever, we don't care.
If they just would allow that window to be resized and then use the frame.
Oh, you can resize it up. It can be taller.
Taller.
It just can't be wider.
No, no.
So you
don't need it to
be
taller. I want it to be wider.
And that's also, I'll point out, just while you're looking at it, the other thing about it is it's organized. It's like more than two dozen items in that little sidebar. So it's not organized well. They're in subgroups. The subgroups are not labeled or explained or even understandable if you stare at them for a while, of like, why are those items grouped together? And the subgroups are not ordered in any order that makes sense. They're not alphabetical. There's no logic to anything in there, which is why I did that one fake screenshot that's like, why don't you just have the system preferences app be a big search box that says, why don't you search for something?
Yeah.
Because everybody's searching anyway, because the organizational structure, which could be atomic and intuitive, and it could make it all work, instead makes no sense.
Yeah.
So you miss half the hierarchy anyway. So it's a disaster.
Yeah.
Each one of us has our hot buttons when it comes to, oh my God, did they even think about this? Why? Who designed this? But I think that's really important to amplify what Jason said. Every time we on this show have had an argument about why didn't they do it this way? This makes no sense. There were people inside Apple who had this argument daily, and they just simply
just
lost.
Wrong people.
And
the wrong people won.
Then, exactly. And eventually they do listen, because it's not – I do think that the initial bad decision often inside Apple happens because of dogma, meaning that, we want the simplicity of the interface, because by limiting it to just – we have this study that says that if you put more than three columns worth of – people remember where they are in the interface.
It might not be a dogma. It might be we want it to look like iOS. We that just too. Want it all to be
which
iOS.
Is,
but that
which
is, that
is
dogma.
Kind of dogma.
Yeah, that is dogma. And I think there's that, and Andy's exactly right. There was this idea of simplicity. And it's like, well, look, it's just one column. But it's a lie. The simplicity is a lie, because one, you click on general, and then there's another two dozen items
it's
inside.
It's complexity through simplicity. It makes it worse.
And so you could embrace the fact that you have lots of settings in your OS and organize them in a way that makes sense, and then make it all searchable, because people are going to search anyway. But if you're going to pretend that people don't have to go to search in order to find anything, you need to make an effort to organize the information that's there. And no, I mean, this is the thing that they inherited, the worst of system preferences, which is a whole bunch of settings that are scattered in all a whole bunch of places that don't make any sense, because the answer is, well, that's there because we added it in 2008 and we needed someplace to put it. So we put it in this place that we created in 2005. And at no point during this process, apparently, did anybody say, why don't we list all our settings and group them in ways that make sense?
How many
or
times,
give up?
How many times have we been through this with Apple? Look at iTunes, for instance. You know, iTunes, this is exactly what happened to iTunes. It just turned into a ball of mud.
Right. So you get that opportunity to fix it.
Or a bricolage, which is my new favorite word.
Bricolage,
I love that.
It's like a beaver dam.
Go ahead, Stephen.
The one benefit, I'm glad they've broken out login items outside of like that users and groups thing, only because like that was a very hidden thing and people wouldn't know why applications are launching just randomly. But I'll also complain about settings since, you know, fall in line. But like even on the iPad.
You're fitting in nicely, Stephen. I like this.
Thank you. The settings app on iPad, you still can do split view or slide over. And, you know, if the settings app is going to be this Swift UI, like the same on iPhone, on iPad, and on the Mac OS, at least let me do a slide over settings pane on the iPad rather than taking up the whole screen. And so there's a lot of work to be done in general.
This is Jason's proposed solution. Just go to System Settings, and there's a big search bar.
Why don't you search for that?
Click on an item to do this in the scrolling list left, or just give up and do the inevitable and search, which is, of course, what everybody will do.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's just, I mean, if you're gonna pretend that people might use the sidebar, you should organize the sidebar.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why even have the sidebar?
Yeah.
Which is missing lots of things, right? Like, as a longtime Mac user, I went in there and I'm like, where's startup disk? Where's startup disk? I need to reboot to a different disk. Where's startup disk? The answer is it's in general now.
Search.
So it's not in the sidebar.
I search
for it.
Yep.
And then it shows up as a search result in the sidebar. And I'm like, oh, well, there you are. But it's not actually in the sidebar. It's in the submenu. And you have to. Anyway, I agree with Stephen completely. One of the great things, let's be positive, one of the great additions in system settings is your startup items used to only be apps. And now it shows you all of the system startup daemons and startup items that are at that higher level. So if you've got like something that installs itself in your system folder and is auto-launching a background task at launch, it used to be invisible, and now it's actually in the UI, so you can turn it off. And that's awesome. Like, good job to whoever did that. I'm sorry what I said about your app, but your feature was great.
Roman Loyola's screenshots in your Macworld article are great. Please give Roman my regards. I love them. Although, does he look like that now? Is that his new look? Because that's wild.
I don't know.
Who knows? I don't think Roman looks like that. But yeah, this is how it's going to be when Ventura comes out. And it's the iOS system settings. And yeah, there's some consistency.
That's okay. Like, that's not the problem. That it looks like iOS is not the problem.
Right.
Right? It's everything else.
It's everything else.
Yeah. See, this is why you're as a longtime observer, your ears are very, very tuned when they do like a new when Craig does the first like introduction to the next version of the operating system. you listen for the phrase people love this feature and we made it even better. That means that we made a huge mistake. Everybody
the old
hates
Apple
it.
Apology.
and now we've totally revisited it because mm-hmm. and we want people to know that you should try that again because it sucks a lot less.
No. We are ready to wrap up and get our picks of the week, but I want to once again say thank you, Stephen, for emailing me, and it was really great to have you on. We will absolutely have you back. Stephen Robles, who is the video and podcast creator at appleinsider.com. He's also at Beard FM. And I just want to point out, it's good your email came when it did, because this morning I came in and Dan Morin sent me three books, trying to bribe me, apparently. So we'll get this is the trilogy from the Bayern
it's the Galactic agenda. Cold War trilogy available at bookstores everywhere.
Thank
by Dan Morin.
I appreciate it. And nice try, but the bribe didn't work. Tell you what, next time.
he's still on paternity leave for another week or so.
All right, I'll wait then.
Give him a chance. Yeah.
No, I love Dan. We'll have him on, and thank you for sending me the whole Galactic Cold War trilogy. That's fantastic. I really appreciate it. All right, Stephen, since you're the newbie, by the way, thank you for filling in for Alex Lindsay. We appreciate it. He'll be back next week, I think. If not, it'll be Dan Morin. Let's get your pick of the week, Stephen Robles.
Absolutely. Well, we talked about AirPods Max before, and so I actually got a new stand for the AirPods Max. This is called the Max Stand. And basically what it does, it solves the charging and desktop issue because you have to charge AirPods Max with lightning, which is kind of frustrating.
So I put it in the bra, and then it just flops there on my desktop with a lightning cable plugged into it. I hate it.
Which is, it's not great. So what this stand does, it comes with two of these like lightning dongles. And you stick this lightning dongle into the AirPods Max. It's pretty low profile, so it's just a little dongle sticking out.
It's a very simple stand, I must say.
And then this stand right here, it'll wirelessly charge the AirPods Max when it has that dongle attached. So you can just set your AirPods Max on the Max stand, and it does put it to sleep. There's a little magnet on this side.
Oh, so you don't even have to put the bra on anymore.
No, not necessary. And then this stand, you just plug into USB-C. And so now my AirPods Max stay charged.
I can
just take them off the stand, use them as normal, put them back on the stand, and they're charging and asleep. And so this is now my desktop AirPods Max stand. I don't have to worry about them, losing battery slowly over time. They'll stay charged, and it puts them to sleep so they don't show up in all my audio inputs and outputs when I'm doing a call like this. So Max stand, two thumbs up. Comes with two of those lightning dongles too. So if you lose one, they give you a second one, or if you and a partner has two pairs of AirPods Max, it comes with those two dongles.
Two pairs. I'm glad it comes in colors. It will match my pink AirPod Max.
Yes, you get all the different colors.
I thought I was really kind of passive aggressive when I bought my AirPod Max. I thought, I'm going to buy them in the worst color. Since they're making me buy them, I'm going to buy them in the worst color. And now I have a game because I wear them when I talk to my mom on my iPad every week. I FaceTime her. And she says every time, she says, you've color coordinated. And I always try to get something that matches the AirPods Pro Max, whatever the hell they're called. So now my stand will match too. You know what? I'm buying this. I think this is totally solves. It's pre-order.
Well, you can get it. It took about a month and a half to come, I think. So it's not too long.
Okay. It was Indiegogo.
They are making them and they are shipping them.
They've raised a lot of money for this. That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah, I love it.
It's good pick. I am going to buy them. They're from Germany, so they're well made.
Germany.
79 euros.
That's it.
And by the way, Dan Morin is not a fool. He also sent a bunch of Galactic Cold War stickers.
Yeah, he did.
Now he's going to get some advertising on my MacBook. Andy Inako, your pick of the week.
Oh, boy, this was a really, really great app that I discovered last weekend. And it's been around for a while. But I went to a bird sanctuary with a friend of mine who is like an avid birder. And she had this amazing app. Now, we spent like 3 hours walking around. Beautiful. It was a beautiful, huge nature sanctuary. We did not. We only saw like a couple of birds, but we spotted a whole much more because she had this app called Merlin on her iPhone that you just keep it run. It's the app is for identifying birds, and you would think that that means that okay, well that's so if it will show me, it'll get my location and show me here's the kind of birds that are usually in your location. It maybe if you it will have photos, you can match up what you think you saw to identify the bird. The coolest feature is you just keep it running. You just keep the microphone open. And whenever there's a bird call, it will just the screen immediately like lights up with could be this. And then as it keeps calling, the list gets a little shorter and then it tells you, no, it's almost certainly this or this. 82% bluebird, maybe 8% chance it's this other thing. So because birds, maybe it was because it's late in the season and the bird sanctuary doesn't put out the birds until the weekends when lots of the tourists come over. But we didn't see much. But again, we were able to know what birds were around just by taking a look at the phone and saying, here's that bird call you just heard. Here's what it refers to, probably. It will also work based on if you are don't have the app open, but if you furnish it with a recording, it can analyze that. And on top of everything else, it will also work with photos. It will also help you identify if you've taken a photo. It'll ask you a series of questions for identifying a bird. So I have to admit that for someone who's lived in roughly the exact same like 50-mile radius for his entire life, it's kind of embarrassing that it took me until now to recognize what a blue jay sounds like, because I always thought I've heard this bird call all my life, but I thought it was I thought it was a crow or something, but no, it is a bluebird. And so now I put it on my own phone. It's available for iOS, Android, anything. And now it really is. It's one of those apps you have standing by and you realize that, oh my God, I can now like have an answer to a question that occurs to you like several times a month when you're out and about. It's partly funded by the Bird Lab at Cornell University. It's a lot of crowdsourced work happening here. But yeah, it's one of those apps where if you have it on your phone, I almost guarantee you wind up using it within the month. It is, and it's a viral app too, because you see this working and it is magic. It's like as soon as she like opened this up and just like showed me the screen, it's like, do I have enough self-service here in the woods that I can actually download this right now? Because I want to download this right now. It's so cool.
That is really cool. You know, it joins a whole category of apps that identify rocks, plants.
Yeah.
I think this is a great use for, is it AI? I don't know. I just saw a story that they're now being able to talk to naked vole rats. Yeah. Via AI. So maybe soon the naked vole rat identifier, and I think that'll be very exciting.
A lot of the stuff on this app, it's not like it's doing a Mechanical Turk thing where someone is looking at this photo or listening to this and telling you what it is. It works as very, very logically. When you first install it, you can choose to download a knowledge database of bird calls for your entire region. So for instance, I downloaded all the birds for a bird package for the Northeast
doing this.
750 megabytes, but that means that it doesn't have to have cell service or a broadband connection.
Nice.
In order to do this stuff. It will just plain work. Again, such a beautifully designed app. I can't. It's the sort of app where I'm just looking for where is the tip jar for this? Where is the Patreon for this? Because rarely do you see an app that is so beautifully made and so suitable for purpose that doesn't leave you hanging where, oh boy, wouldn't it be great if it could just like, I could just leave it open and it would identify bird calls automatically. But of course, I don't live in the 24th century. Wait a minute, that's a built-in feature? Holy crap.
It's so funny because we have, Lisa's been putting out bird feeders in the backyard and we've been trying to figure out, well, what's that? This is perfect timing. We are approaching a hat trick because I have purchased the Max stand. I am downloading the Merlin bird ID. Now it's up to you, Jason Snell, to make it complete. What is your pick of the week?
My pick of the week is, do you use Discord? Well, I know you do, because Club Twit members get access to a special Discord.
All over
and a
Discord.
Lot of us have Discords. I wish that Slack did this. It does it for bots, but it doesn't let people do this. This is a free app for the Mac on the Mac App Store called Elsewhen. And here's what it does. You set a time, and it copies the code. It's actually like the Unix time code to the clipboard, and you can paste it into Discord. So if you're talking to somebody in Discord and saying, I'm going to be on tomorrow at 5 p.m. my local time, you can put that time in to Elsewhen and click copy and paste it in. And the people in Discord will see it at their local time.
What?
And separately, you can also just put a regular human-readable thing on the clipboard with a bunch of different time zones if you want to paste that in somewhere like in a Slack. So it's basically a tool that helps you communicate to other people in other time zones about what time you're actually trying to communicate. And I love it for Discord because I can say, I'm going to be on doing a live podcast at 9 a.m. on Friday, and I put that in, and then I see 9 a.m. Friday, but somebody in New York would say noon on Friday, and somebody in Australia would say, I don't even know what they'd see, 5 a.m. on Saturday. But it's pretty great, and it's a feature that's just in Discord. You have to use the Unix time format, but you know, Elsewhen takes care of that for you. And I love it because it means that everybody's on the same page about what time it is. Whereas in Slack, I will often post, you know, 8 Pacific, and then it's up to everybody else to figure out what Pacific time means.
Yeah, we do that. I do it in an audio form. I wish there were a way to do
this. Oh, yeah, you need Elsewhen for audio.
Elsewhen for audio, because I'm always going, you know, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time, 1900, whatever, UTC. This is so, yeah, it is a hat trick. I mean, it was easy because both Andy and your picks are free, which makes up for the 88 euros I paid for the Max time.
No, Alex this week. I think that's what
happened. Yeah, that's what happened. Actually, Stephen did a great job of taking the high end, but not so high that I couldn't afford it. Elsewhen looks great, you know. So I don't, it doesn't just have to be for Discord because I could use the kind of universal one and paste it into Slack or whatever too, right?
Yeah, the problem is, yeah, the ones where it puts human readable text on the clipboard,
then
you can use that anywhere.
Yeah.
I wish Slack had this feature, but Discord is the only one that lets you put in a Unix time with brackets around it, and it just converts it
to your
local time.
That's a Discord feature, of course. Discord's very,
and it's nice.
Very clever.
And you can even choose what the formatting is, so you can say just a date, or you can say a date and a time, and Discord formats it all nicely for you. It's really great.
Elsewhen by Benjamin Carter. It is Mac, iPhone, and iPad. A lot of us Discord. I Discord on my iPad, so that's very handy.
Yeah.
And
it's everywhere.
For somebody in the chat room who wanted to know where the Mac stand is, it's themacstand.com. Easy.
M-A-X.
Easy peasy. M-A-X, not M-A-C-S. Yeah. Themacstand.com. And merlin.allaboutbirds.org. Right, there we go. There's your three picks of the week. And Stephen, thank you for being on the show. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're going to have to send me some Apple Insider stickers. But other than that, I think you've done a wonderful, wonderful job. Yeah, you said that you'd been listening for years. So I'm glad we could get you on.
Twitch and MacBreak Weekly, one of the first podcasts I listened to and got me into it. So thank you so much for having me.
Nice. Great to have you. AppleInsider.com, and his website is Beard. It's the best website ever, beard.fm. I really like it. Stephen, we will have you back. You're fantastic. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Jason Snell, sixcolors.com. And, of course, for Macworld and elsewhere, at Jay Snell. And if you want to know which podcasts he does, because he does a whole lot of them, sixcolors.com/podcasts. Anything in particular you'd like to flog?
We'll be doing I can plug this next week too. We just did our upgrade draft where we draft things that we think are going to happen. And then next week we'll do a post, event episode of upgrade. And I think my last clockwise may be tomorrow because Dan is going to be coming back from paternity leave. So that'll be fun. Talking to my buddy, Micah. We'll probably sing, you know, cause that happens.
Aww. That's a good idea to do like a draft, for what Apple will announce.
Little prediction game.
Yeah.
Little prediction game. It makes it fun, and still you're talking about what's going to happen, but it provides a little bit of extra juice, extra excitement.
I wish I'd thought of it. That's a great idea. Upgrade is at relay.fm. Is Clockwise also relay.fm?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's easy to find. Thank you, Jason. And
thanks,
Mr.
Leo.
Andy Inoko, WGBH Boston. When are you going to be on next?
The show is off this week for summer vacation, Labor Day vacation. But I'm going to be on again next week, my usual time, Friday, about 12:45 in the afternoon at the Boston Public Library. So come on down, get yourself a cup of coffee and a cookie, which you will pay for because it is a cafe with a studio attached, and watch it live.
Nice. Thank you, Andrew. Thanks, Stephen. Thanks, Andy. Thanks, Jason. Thanks to all of you for joining us on Mac Break Weekly. We do the show. Now, if I only had Elsewhen, I could tell you when we do the show. It's roughly 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. You're going to have to do the math from there, I'm sorry to say. I say the times we do it because you can watch us live at live.twit.tv. There's audio and video there. You can stream. If you're watching or listening live, chat live at our IRC, which is open to all, irc.twit.tv. Or you can join us in our Discord. That's Club Twit members, and it's a really nice way. You might have noticed, for instance, that this particular episode of Mac Break Weekly was ad-free. That was through no intent of our own. It's not how we want it. But that you could see how much better it is without the ads. That's what Club Twit members get. Ad-free versions of all of our shows, access to the Club Twit Discord, and the Twit Plus feed, which includes a lot of things that don't make it into the podcast, including shows we do exclusively for the club, like Hands on Mac, Micah does that, Hands on Windows from Paul Thurrott, the Untitled Linux Show, really great show from Jonathan Bennett and company, because everybody in the club pitches in on that one, The Giz Fizz with Dick D. Bartolo, and I'm sure there will be more, and probably more importantly than anything else, your $7 a month, yep, that's all it costs, does really help us continue to produce new content. And on weeks like this where there's no ads for Mac Break Weekly, it helps make it possible. So I am very grateful, to you for joining. If you're already a member, if not, actually, if you're a member, you didn't hear this ad. But so for the rest of you, twit.tv/clubtwit. As I mentioned, it's only $7 a month. There is a $2.99. You could do the Apple Podcast version of this or any of our shows. That's the ad-free version for $2.99 a month, but you only get that one show. We also have annual plans and corporate plans if your company wants to support Twit and to give our show to your company. So thank you in advance. I guess that's all I need to say. Thank you for being here. And in the words of Alex Lindsay, get back to work because Mac Break is broke. No. Break time is over. Take care. I snuck it in.
Hey, we should talk Linux. It's the operating system that runs the internet, but your game consoles, cell phones, and maybe even the machine on your desk. But you already knew all that. What you may not know is that Twit now has a show dedicated to it, the Untitled Linux Show. Whether you're a Linux pro, a burgeoning sysadmin, or just curious what the big deal is, you should join us on the Club Twit Discord every Saturday afternoon for news, analysis, and tips to sharpen your Linux skills. And then make sure you subscribe to the Club Twit exclusive Untitled Linux Show. Wait, you're not a Club Twit member yet? Well, go to twit.tv/clubtwit and sign up. Hope to see you there.